Hey kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We have a really, really cool show later on in the episode. I'm going to be chatting with Phil Moore, the host of our childhood's Nick Arcade. He's going to be at MAGFest, and he's going to be on SML later in the episode. But first up, we got some reviews to take care of, and Chris Taylor's kicking off the show. Chris, how are you doing?
Doing great. Just doing the thing that everyone loves the most, as far as people with large video game collections, and that's moving.
Oh, man. That sounds awful.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before, we're in this improbable house on the side of a hill, so we're having to, we have to go downstairs to our house.
Oh, man. Park.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
That does not sound fun at all.
No, fortunately, though, I've had time to play some games, so...
Sweet. What do you say we talk about said games, huh?
Yeah.
Cool.
I think that's why I'm here.
Sounds good. First game to talk about is called Blossom Tales, The Sleeping King, developed by Castle Pixel, published by FDG Entertainment. Released December 21st on the Switch for $14.99. Explore a vast open game world in classic action adventure fashion as Lily, Knight of the Rose. Slash your way through monster infested dungeons to save the kingdom of Blossom from eternal darkness. Be part of a vivid, dynamic story passed down from grandfather to grandchildren by influencing the course of events yourself. Chris, what did you think of Blossom Tales?
That's an interesting way of putting it. passed on the story of literally. Okay, so when you start this game, it literally opens up with a grandfather talking to his grandchildren and telling the story of Lily. And actually, the entire game is sort of narrated through the grandfather. And it includes dialogue between him and the grandchildren and stuff over what happens, and I find that really, really charming. Blossom Tales. It's basically at first glance, and I would say also second through tenth glance, it basically is modern Legend of Zelda: Link's Awakening. Only this time, Zelda's a girl.
Nice.
And, it's basically a top-down adventure game, where you slash your sword and, go through dungeons and, you find tools in the dungeons that help you out to get to later dungeons, things like that. It all looks very familiar. Having said, if I was to compare this to Link's Awakening, I would say it's an improvement in almost every way. So that's it's not a clone so much as an usurper.
Nice.
Yeah. So going back to the narration, one thing that I really like is the grandfather. The way that the game explains, how you get stuff. You know how Zelda games after the Super Nintendo were very explainy about everything? It's you got the bomb. It's been 30 games, but we're still going to tell you exactly what the bomb does. And, this game still does that, but it's refreshing because it's a grandfather explaining to his grandkids what's going on. And, in fact, if you die in a dungeon... It'll be something one of the grandkids is wait, what? That's the end? And the grandfather will be no, I was just seeing if you were paying attention. And then you start the dungeon over,
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool like that. And really, that charm and attention to detail is present in every part of this game. There's so much to do, and it's all really fun. I had beaten the first few dungeons, and... I was okay, that's enough. I'm going to go back to Skyrim. And then an hour later, I'm still trying to grind for coins and try to purchase these other items and things like that to get the triple arrow bow attack.
Nice.
It's great. So like an hour later, I'm like, man, I don't even want to play Skyrim. I got a triple arrow now. It's going down. So like some other things, like basically I kind of have to bounce all of the descriptions that I have for this game off of like everyone's idea of a Zelda game because it's so similar. But there are a couple of things that are like unusual. Like for instance, okay, so you have the tried and true, heart life system where, you got hearts and when you get hit, it loses a quarter or half a heart or something like that. And the way to get more hearts, besides, of course, beating the boss in a dungeon, is to get like a quarter heart, which in those Zelda games, you know, you have to like complete like, you know, obscure quests and like find them in chests hidden away that you have to use like your new items to reach. Mm-hmm. Oh, the space heater kicked back on.
Yay. So,
and I can't go over and get it without getting up. Actually, I'll go turn it off and we can edit that out, I guess. One sec. Damn you. Okay.
I enjoy the fact that it was either a space heater or a cat using the litter box and scratching mm-hmm. the background.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's... anyway, Blossom Tales.
Okay. Where was I? Okay, so in The Legend of Zelda, like, you get your container hearts either by beating a boss or by finding quarter hearts, which are scattered across obscure locations where you need to use your newly gotten items to reach them. In this game, the same is true, except that also you can just go to a store and buy one. Like,
nice.
Coins abound in this game. It's like rupees, you know, if you cut down grass or something like that, or defeat enemies, you get coins.
Mm-hmm.
And, you can just totally buy your way into, like, having as many hearts as you want, apparently.
That works.
So, yeah. So I was quite pleased with that. There's a whole lot more characters, and they kind of fill up the starting castle and the nearby towns and things like that. Only the one weird thing about it is that they decided to go with the odd Western RPG approach to NPCs in that they fill up, like, towns and stuff with them, but they all each, like, scroll through, like, 10 preset things to say. And there's like more than 10 of them. So you wind up talking to like a person all the way across town who says the same thing that the first person you talk to might say, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like, well, that's fine because it adds flavor to have so many people like around. Because Zelda's always feel like such a lonely adventure anyway. You only ever have the one town and it's got like 10 people in it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, then you get down into the dungeons and man, you have like really giant enemies, all pixel based like stuff. You have puzzles like walking on tile puzzles where, you know, you have to like walk on each tile like one time and you can't cross the path or anything like that.
Mm.
And, then you'll have like ones where you have to shoot like an arrow through a flame to light another torch and like you have to light all the torches in order to get through a certain area. And the cool thing about this game is that they have no bones about throwing like several different puzzles into the same room.
Oh, nice.
So you go into this room, like I distinctly remember in the first real dungeon, starter dungeon is kind of it's more tutorial mode, but in the first proper dungeon, like, you're doing all this and fighting off, like, these giant enemies and stuff like that, so it was really pretty awesome. I was very impressed with it. So, yeah, all in all, like, Blossom Tales is a game that I think, well, belongs on the Switch, for sure, because, for one, it's so much like an existing Nintendo game that I would really wonder, like, seeing it on a different system.
I know it originally came out on Steam, so it is out there on other platform because I believe it's a console exclusive on the Switch, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that, like, I didn't know it was on Steam, but yeah, it's a game that belongs on a Nintendo system, and it is super good.
It, like, just feels at home there.
Yeah, and people who are fans of the old school Zelda stuff, like, you know, I know everyone's excited about Breath of the Wild because it's Zelda meets Skyrim, but, like, Blossom Tales, The Sleeping King is basically Zelda meets Zelda.
Nice. So, $15, what is your verdict, sir?
Oh, yeah, absolutely get it. In fact, I wish it was more expensive, so that meant that they had a physical card out. I would totally collect this game.
Hey, maybe in due time. Maybe if it does well enough, they'll be like, you know what? Let's make a physical version.
Well, maybe they'll do that thing where they, like, bring in a whole bunch more content or something and package it all together, and, like, now we'll put it on a cart.
Maybe.
It's the Blossom Tales collection. Oh, man, I would love a sequel. Oh, and one more thing I wanted to say about it is that I love it does best the style of 8-bit plus, I think, which is, like, where all the graphics are pixels, but it actually has, like, dynamic, real-looking lighting, and also, like, an 8-bit bleepy bloopy soundtrack, but also with, like, synths and strings and stuff underneath.
Nice.
So, aesthetically, this game is super pleasing. Don't let screenshots fool you. Like, it looks great when you're actually playing it.
Nice. I am probably going to pick this up myself with fingers crossed to get some decent Christmas money, and I'll pick it up.
I'll do it, yeah. As a fellow Earthbound fan, I think you'll find a lot to enjoy in the writing. So,
I dabbled with it a bit on Steam, so I know what I'm getting into. It's good stuff. I really dug it. But next game to talk about is called Mom Hid My Game, developed by Hap Inc., published by Kemco, released December 21st on the Switch and 3DS for $4.99. It's gone. My game is lost. Take back to hunting for consoles hidden by mom. Let's find the game console mom hid. Is it inside the chest or on the shelf? Could it be under the sofa too? Where is it? Find the game in each level using various items. An easygoing and funny escape game awaits. Chris, what is this game?
Well, obviously, since it's a Kemco game, you had to call me on. So, Mom Hid My Game is an RPG, kind of a mix between a Super Nintendo and, I would say, a 32-bit RPG where... No, wait, actually, it's nothing like that at all.
You dick.
I know. I'm making fun of my own review style, though. It's okay to self-parody, right?
Yeah, of course.
Mom Hid My Game, it's basically my game of the year.
Wow.
No, it's not. It really is awesome, though. It's a puzzle game where you play a little Japanese boy. I say Japanese because the language of the game is Japanese, and a lot of the settings seem pretty Japan-specific. But, yeah, so your mom has decided you've been playing too many games, so she gets your game and hides it, and every day, each level plays out as a day, and you have to find it. The game is the traditional point-and-click puzzle game, where you have to click or tap on the screen, but I don't ever tap my Switch screen. but you move the cursor around or tap on an area where you think it might be, and, Your ever-present nemesis is your mother, who might be hiding behind a curtain or behind a door. And sometimes, like, something happens where you have to somehow get her to move away from the game because it's like she's blocking it. And it's one of those, there's no penalty for losing. You just start the level over. If you get caught, it's usually pretty funny because this kid gets himself into all sorts of scrapes. Often puzzles are solved through just figuring out what works through just dying or, you know, doing the wrong thing so many times that eventually you eliminate all but the correct answer, which is like the Zack and Wiki style of puzzle game.
Yeah.
Well, I think they call it like a Sierra style puzzle game and and there's another one. Ah, man, I don't know. I have friends that know puzzle games way better than I do, and they have them categorized. Like, there's one where you just explore until you find the thing, and the other one is where you die a whole bunch of times until you finally get the thing, and this is the latter of those two.
Nice.
But yeah, like the thing about this game is that it's like at first you're just like, okay, this is certainly a thing. But by a few days in, you're just completely hooked. Like you really want to like get through the next stage and see what else happens because there's just all kinds of hilarious stuff.
I know it started as a mobile game, and I actually played the first one on my iPhone a little bit, and I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And it only gets more and more ridiculous. And actually, the interesting thing is that I handed this off to a roommate who subsequently actually beat the game after a while. There's like about 50, there's 50 stages in the main game. So if you're the kind who burns through puzzle games really quickly, then this is a very quick play. However, it does unlock some more stuff to play, so that's good. But yeah, the ending to the game is so absurd and hilarious and heartwarming. And so I really recommend everybody try and get to the ending because it's so good. But yeah, so it's basically just, it's a game that you play in order to see all the funny stuff that can possibly happen, while at the same time giving yourself a pretty good, I'd say a mild to moderate challenge. I don't think anything in the game is like really have to sit there and stew over it for 2 hours type of puzzling.
This isn't meant to be something that you're going to spend days on end trying to solve all the puzzles. It's meant to be more of a quick escape kind of game.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, the puzzles are quick and, you know, sometimes they're, you know, they're so, the solution might be so obscure that there's just no way you're going to predict it. And that in itself is the joke. So it's kind of like, it's a game that you play to lose sometimes.
Yeah. And even better, it's only $5. So for $5, what are your thoughts?
Oh my God, $5, just beat it and play through some of the stuff that unlocks whenever you beat it. And seriously, just enjoy. It's a fun, quick little game.
Nice. Sounds good. The last game you're here to talk about is called Vostok Inc., developed by Nosebleed Interactive, published on the Switch by Wired Productions. It released December 7th on the Switch for $14.99. It is available on other platforms as well. The Wolf of Wall Street with Lasers. You're the newly appointed CEO of Vostok Inc. As a greedy space capitalist, your ultimate goal is to get filthy, stinking rich. Chris, how rich did you get?
Oh my God, this game. So,
in a good way or a bad way?
No, good way. I mean, kind of bad way because it's such a time sink, but but a good way in the sense that it's super fun. Yeah, Vostok Inc. They should have just called this it's shmups plus capitalism. Like, what else can you? What else do you need? Yeah. So this game is one of the most innovative things I've ever seen. It's a capitalism sim, which actually have taken place in space before. There's a, I can't remember what it's called, but there's a game from the early aughts, which dealt with like buying and selling alien stuff across the solar system. It was all very sort of, it's good if you're into that sort of thing. But like whenever you would, get a deal from an alien, they would go, "Great deal." And like, I've been quoting that in my head ever since.
Oh God.
I'll remember what that game's called at some point. Anyway, so this game takes that and also adds in a little bit of, Geometry Wars. That is to say, it's the action part of the game is a twin stick shooter. Now what that is, for the folks at home who aren't like crazy about shmups, is that with the left stick you move the ship around in a free range type of thing, and then the right stick just like wherever you point it, your ship just starts shooting automatically. So again, it's probably most popularized by Geometry Wars, but there's like many, many games that have used this this style of shooting, and so. You travel with your little ship all the way across the solar system, and enemies just pop up. Like they basically they come at you first with dialogue between the, I guess they're space pirates in the first solar system, And they talk to your guy, who's I think his name is Jimmy or something like that. And he's like kind of your avatar, but he's not you. Like, you're this whoever, fat cat in a suit or something. I don't actually know what your character looks like, but he sort of speaks for you. He's like your assistant sort of thing.
Fucking and, Jimmy.
Yeah, he's great. And yeah, he calmly explains that you're there to colonize and drain all planets of their resources, and the other people are somehow not cool with this, and so they just randomly send ships after you, like, constantly. Pretty much wherever you go, they'll spawn some enemies, and you can fight them for money, and with that money, or moolah rather, what you do then is you go to the planets. And on the planets, you just have this list of different money generators that you can place on the planet, starting with mines, going to farms, and so on and so forth, even up to government offices and religious organizations. And
so basically, it's a mix of, like, asteroids, space twin stick shooter, and an idle game like Clicker Hero.
Yes. So once you build your generators on the planets, like, you start gaining money passively. That is to say, like, you might start off getting like 1 moolah per second, but then you build a second farm and now it's 2 moolah per second. And here's probably the best part of the whole thing, is that you can purchase an ATM, which actually stands for something different. I don't actually know what it stands for, but it's a system where once you leave the planet and go to the second planet to colonize it, then money is still passively put into your bank account. So once you set all those up, then you start getting like lots and lots of money per second, and like while you're sitting here fighting, you're just passively generating income. And anytime that you're in a planet's menu system where the game is essentially paused, or anytime you go back to your own space station where you can purchase really cool upgrades and weapons and combinations of weapons, which, you know, I'll get to in a second, then you're still like passively generating money. So the game has you like, it really hooks its claws into you at the beginning, because you want to keep playing because you want to keep passively generating that income so that you can spend it and, of course, get more income, which is the number one rule of capitalism.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever mentioned this on the show, but I reviewed it on the 360 when it first came out, and there were episodes of the show where I had the game idling
yes,
in a space station while I was doing the show, and I would routinely like turn around and check and buy some shit while like someone else was talking. That's how addicted I was when this was on the 360 or on the Xbox One. What am I saying?
Yeah, for real. I when I started moving, I actually had the game up, and I would keep the Switch in my front seat, and when I was driving, I would just keep it on a planet and start generating money, and then when I would get to a red light or something, I'd like purchase some stuff and then put it back down.
That's the way to do it. And speaking of planets, the Nintendo Switch version actually has an exclusive little bonus in the fact that Pluto is once again a planet.
Woohoo! Yes. I didn't know that they had taken it out, but yes.
Pluto is a Nintendo Switch exclusive planet.
Nice. I love it. Go Nintendo. Yes, so you can do that. And of course, once you do that, like I said, you can purchase your upgrades, which it's got some great firepower that's available to you. Of course, the funny thing is about it is that, you know, you go in, you buy something for 5,000, and then like the next upgrade costs like $1 billion, and you're like, what? But then you play for like 30 more minutes and suddenly you have $1 billion. And so you're like, okay, it's time to get that. So it's like, it seems insurmountable at first, but then you like, you really start, generating crazy amounts of money, and this stuff, your dreams come true.
It's the beauty of idle games. I had fun. Because on the Xbox version, I was a number of solar systems into the game, and I would go back to the earlier ones and be like, oh my God, I'm earning nothing on these planets.
Oh yeah, no, but you can, but then you can open the later unlockable, like, things, and those actually start generating a ton of money too. So mm-hmm. There's all the reason to go back, because yes, there's several solar systems in this game, each with different aliens that interact differently with your characters, and it's very funny. Like, the game's writing is super, super funny. It's like punch you in the stomach satire. like the way the description of everything from the mines to the farms to, like I said, you know, government centers, you know, bottled water plants, things like that. It's like everything that you read is just this, like,
and Jimmy.
if you're not a Marxist, like, communist by the end of this game, then I don't know what's wrong with you.
Oh man. And friggin' Jimmy. I know you can't compare it to the other versions, but I know on one of my minor gripes was that Jimmy never shut the fuck up.
Oh, you can block his number in this game.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah. There's an option in the menu that says, block Jimmy, and then it blocks all his incoming calls unless it's a story sequence. So
that is awesome, because
go ahead.
That was my, like, the only gripe was that I would try going somewhere and he would start talking, so I would have to hit the A button to shut him the fuck up, but I would accidentally buy something he couldn't shut up. So
yeah, and that's the other thing, is that the dialogue in the game is done through gibberish, but it's like it's an especially grating gibberish. So, and once you, like, hold down the A button to make the letter or make the words go by faster, like, it raises the pitch of the gibberish. And so I ended up turning the gibberish completely off. So there's no voice acting in my playthrough.
Well, at least you can shut Jimmy up.
You can shut Jimmy up in the Switch version. Sweet. So go buy it.
Sweet. So I guess that covers it. $15. Your verdict is a buy it.
Definitely buy this. I mean, shmup fans, capitalists, liberals, everybody.
Idle game fans.
Idle game fans, of course.
Man, so 3 for 3 with you. Holy shit.
Yeah, I got a lot of good games this time. So kind of, I'm hoping the next set of them is just as good.
I got to find you something horrible to play.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll find something to like about it.
Oh, man. Well, Chris, thank you as always for coming on and chatting about these games with me. We're recording this just before Christmas, so I hope you have a fantastic Christmas.
You too, Joe. Merry Christmas to all. God bless us, everyone, especially the capitalists.
All right, next game to talk about is called Tiny Metal, developed by Area 35, published by Sony Music Entertainment, released December 21st on PS4, PC, and Nintendo Switch for a Sony Music Entertainment title. Interesting. For $24.99, a turn-based strategy game of intrigue with a distinct Japanese flavor that takes place in the aftermath of your king's assassination. Roll out the tanks, create more troops, expand your squad, and struggle for territory with war room levels of control. Our good friend Tom Miller's covering this one. Tom, how you doing?
Oh, things are going all right. Had a good holiday, and life is good.
Did you get drunk on Christmas?
A little bit.
Sweet.
Oh, yeah.
All about that communion wine getting you fucked up.
communion beer, maybe, but I don't know.
Getting drunk on the blood of Christ, right?
Yeah.
That's how it works. So tell me about
Pop Jesus.
Oh, God, definitely. Oh, man. So tell me, what is Tiny Metal?
So, Tiny Metal is a game, basically, Area 35, like, pretty much saw that Nintendo had kind of left the Advance Wars franchise in the background for the last couple generations, while Fire Emblem just, you know, they were pumping them out left and right, and they pretty much said, this will not stand, we're going to just make our own. And it's absolutely a spiritual successor to that series. And I'm going to just kind of drop this right at the beginning. I've never actually played any of the Advance Wars games. I really like tactical strategy RPG kind of games, so it's kind of weird that I haven't, but most of my experience comes from, like, Shining Force and Final Fantasy Tactics and, like, Valkyria Chronicles and stuff.
Yeah.
But I've always really loved that genre, though, so I was really excited to play this, even though I hadn't played, like, the games that it was so clearly inspired by.
I am definitely surprised to hear you've never played an Advance Wars before.
I know, and it's so weird, because I had a GBA, like, right from the beginning, and I had played a bunch of games on it, but somehow never that one.
What the fuck, Tom? What
I
the fuck?
I was slacking off. but, yeah, it And from what I've seen, this Tiny Metal just really does hit all the right notes as far as that goes. It has a really fun, like, cartoony look to it, but it has a mix of that, like, military strategy with a little bit of anime and just a little bit of silliness to kind of, like, balance it out and keep it from being too serious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So once you get into the actual gameplay, even though I haven't played the other... I say the other games in the series, but like it feels that way. But it felt really natural for me to get into. You have like you always get like this assortment of infantry and artillery units, and you command them on the battlefield, trying to gain an advantage in a sort of like a rock, paper, scissors kind of way against people. And you get more types of units as you progress through the campaign. Get more like technology and stuff as well. But you just are basically trying to make your way through this map, outsmarting the enemy and just trying to make your way through a campaign. It's on an island country called Zapan, and I don't know what they were going for with that name.
It doesn't ring a bell at all.
No, I don't think so. I think it was totally original. but even though the mechanics of the game are pretty simple, they did a really good job with the map of making it so all of the terrain and all of the cities and where enemies are placed and stuff really makes you, it really keeps you on your feet and makes you have to kind of keep changing your strategies around. So it really works well as a tactics game. And they used each element of the game engine in a clever way to make it just seem like a constantly fluctuating challenge, even though it is pretty simple. So the sound of the game is really interesting. The cutscenes are all voice acted in Japanese. And I'm fine with that. Because I know it's an indie game made... Well, it was a pretty big budget for an indie game, I think. But still, it is a really small studio. But I kind of wish they would have done more English stuff because the voice acting for the battles is all in English. And it's really well done. It has, like, such a great sense of humor. And all the characters have their own, like, sort of super exaggerated personalities. Like, you know, the artillery units are like, yeah, we're going to go get them! Like, no fucking around! I doubt he actually says no fucking around because
I was going to say it's rated E10.
But that's what it sounds like. Maybe they've lightened up on their standards a little bit, but like having a character drop F-bombs every 30 seconds is maybe a little bit much. I don't know. But yeah, it does make me really hope that they do continue to support the game. And also, one thing that I was kind of disappointed by, and I've heard other people complain about as well, is that there's no multiplayer implemented yet, which normally wouldn't be a huge deal, but it's actually, there's a multiplayer mode on the title screen, and it just says, like, not, or, like, coming soon, which is,
weird.
Like...
weird. Especially because this isn't, like, a Steam Early Access game. This is game.
This is official, so, I'm sure they're working on it, but, like, it's just kind of weird to have the game come out with an entire gameplay mode missing.
Yeah.
But I guess to make up for that, there's a skirmish mode, and what that basically is, there's like 56 complete extra maps in addition to the main campaign. So like while people are waiting for it, there's just a ton of extra content, and I don't know. It's actually a pretty huge game in that way. I mean, that would, because some of the maps are really big, so. You know, I mean, there's plenty to keep you busy even without that. But, like, I feel like playing this game against a human opponent would be just a totally different and really cool experience as well.
Yeah, I'm interested to see more about the game if the multiplayer version or mode does come out. It kind of rubs me the wrong way because I saw that with another game that had a multiplayer option on the main menu, but it still had local multiplayer. It's just the online multiplayer was like coming soon in an update.
Yeah.
But like to for just not have access, it at all is odd.
Yeah. But like, so the game though is like, I think it really did. Like, I don't like that that's missing either, but like they were really just trying to make a new Advance Wars game. And I think it really does kind of fill a spot in like the tactical RPG strategy world that is sort of, it's been missing for a little while. Like there's been stuff sort of like it, but This has very much its own thing going on, as opposed to like Valkyria Chronicles or any like Final Fantasy Tactics stuff. I think they did a really good job with setting it apart. Nice. And even though it is like Advance Wars, whatever number after, I think there were three of them, but it's also cool. Like, and you were mentioning to me, and I also saw another person, a friend of mine, posting about it on Facebook. It's like, I just bought a Sony game on the Switch. What is this, 1994? It's kind of like...
From what I hear, the agreement to publish the game on the Switch was made before Sony picked up the publishing rights. Mm. And I guess they're just honoring that already made contract.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're going to see Sony games appearing on other platforms regularly. I think this is just a unique occasion.
Yeah.
And even crazier is that the publisher Sony Music Entertainment.
Yeah, right.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, well, I guess that's probably like how it was a possibility in the first place. Like, maybe it's like just detached enough from the main company that it's like, we can redo a multi-platform thing.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But anyway, $25 on this one. What do you think?
I think that for fans of for fans of tactics, I'd say buy it. It's a really fun game, and it just hits all the right notes as far as tactics goes. I've had a really good time playing it, and if you're not really into those kind of games, it might still be worth a try because it's one of those genres that if you haven't really ever gotten into it, it can be really fun regardless. So, but I really enjoyed my time with it, and I would give it my recommendation for sure.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I hope the online play comes soon.
Yes, me too. That would make me even less unlikely to not recommend a thing. What the hell am I talking about?
Oh, man.
And then I got into about like five negatives there, and then I just kind of lost track of where I was at.
You just got to bullshit your way out of that.
I like to think I'm better at that than I probably actually am.
It's okay. I like to think that too. Oh, man. Tom, always good having you on. Any final thoughts to sum it all up?
Oh, coffee is good.
All right, next game to talk about is called Xenon Valkyrie Plus, developed by Diabolical Mind, published by Cowcat, released December 19th on the PS Vita for $9.99. Xenon Valkyrie Plus is a roguelite platformer game with RPG elements in which you must fight to the deepest part of a moon and halt the plans of a wicked witch. Obtain many weapons as you fight through a unique, randomly generated world every time you play. Level up and obtain the amazing power of the Xenon Valkyrie. Bringing in our good friend Pernell Vaughn to talk about this one. Pernell, how you doing?
Doing all right. Christmas is done. I got some socks. You know, I feel less energetic than I would have expected after a holiday. I think I just kind of burned through any reserves I had on deck.
Nice.
But now, just in time to go back to work and then prepare for the new year. So, vroom, vroom.
Indeed. So, tell me, what is Xenon Valkyrie Plus?
So, Xenon Valkyrie Plus is a platformer roguelike of sorts. Like, some people might have compared it to Spelunky, but I would feel not. Only, I would feel basically, I would do so only in the sense of how the platforming works, because you start off at the hub, you choose between three different characters, and those characters have different abilities. One comes with an item scanner, in which when you use it, it allows you to kind of look for items on the world and each area. One gets a double jump, self-explanatory, and the last guy gets a plastic C4 bomb, which can be affixed to walls. And each time you use one, it has like a slight cooldown time, and when you, well, aside from the double jump, it has a cooldown, and once it's regenerated, you can use it again. But the game itself is, once you choose one of these characters who have different starting weapons and stats and all, you have to descend into a labyrinth. This labyrinth is a, as you mentioned earlier, Joe, a randomly generated 2D plane that consists of multiple floors. And as you proceed downward, you have a sword weapon and a gun weapon, which you use to kill various adversaries within the labyrinth. Each time you get a kill, you get experience points, which will eventually allow you to level up and distribute talent points at different pit stops in the game as you proceed downward. You can level up your bullet totals, your hit point totals, your attack power, your defense power. So you get one key when you start a run. You can buy new keys by acquiring money and then purchasing keys at pit stops between floors, which allows you to make those such purchases, just like how you level up your guy. Or every area tends to have one overly large baddie, like a bigger baddie than usual, who you can kill and then get a key, which will allow you to open up a chest. One chest per section, which will then let you get new equipment. This equipment, again, could be either a sword or a gun. Every once in a blue moon, you might get like a weird sub item. I've gotten very few of them for as much as I've played this game. I've surprisingly gotten not too many of them, but like it'll be maybe something like a free hit or like maybe like a double tap damage or something. Like, it's like weird stuff. Like, I don't even want to go into specifics because, again, because I didn't get very many, I can't even tell you what the heck they are. But you can get those kind of things. In addition, also with your gun weapon, it runs on bullets. And that doesn't regenerate like your sub weapon does. Instead, you have to find bullets strewn throughout the map. So sometimes you can break crates. And those crates might have healing items in them or bullets, which you can use to recharge your gun. And each section, which I think it varies between how many per section, but per environment. But every time you get to the end of a section, you have to fight a boss monster or robot or manufacturing concern or any number of things that it could possibly be, but you have to fight a boss. And in the boss fights, for some whatever reason, they disable your gun. So you can only use the melee weapon for boss fights.
Really?
And that's what I mean. Unless I was just doing something wonky, every time I got to a boss, I could not fire the gun. Sword only. So you have to fight the boss sword with only your sword. And if you beat the boss, you proceed to the next zone. And similar to another game, i.e. Enter the Gungeon, each time you enter a new zone, there will be a guy in the first hub who, if you bring the right components, will activate an elevator, which allows you to warp to that section by default without having to proceed through the first or second or third section again. This comes with pluses and minuses. If you do the warp, you don't have to worry about doing the first zones or other zones early again, but you end up in the later area underdeveloped, which could leave you in a bit of a bind if you're not really good at the game by that point. So, sad things about the game. Very light, to be honest with you, because even with these complaints, I played the hell out of this thing. So I'm not sure how many guns and swords the label or the header will tell you are in this game, but there are very little differences between them. Every sword looks different, but swings exactly the same way. Unless there's like some swords that pop up later in the game, I should explain that too. Before I go to the rest of that, so they have like a default load of weapons you can come across in these treasure chests. But as you purchase or beat bosses, you can get items called Teemonite or Teemerite, and that can be used after you die and get spawned back in the main hub. You shop at the local store up there. If you purchase weapons from that store, you don't actually get them. But what you do accomplish is you make them accessible from treasure chests within the environment. So you're essentially making it so that you have odds of getting better weapons and guns, which I think is funny I say that because clearly a gun is a weapon, but whatever. Point is, you can get better fire, you can get better weaponry by purchasing it at the shop to appear in chests. So now back to the complaint, guns and swords behave pretty much identically. I did notice every once in a while I might get a gun where, like, instead of firing a pea bullet, it might fire a bit of a laser. So, I mean, there are some varieties there in the sense, but when I say differently, I mean like behaviorally. So like, figure you might get a sword that has longer reach or a sword that might swing up, you know, thoughts like that may have like a triangle that shoots, swings out in three directions, that kind of stuff. But all the swords do is exactly the same thing. It's a very small swipe and it doesn't go very far out in front of your character. So attacking guys with a melee attack can be pretty risky because you don't get much room for, there's not very much of a hit radius out there. You don't go too far with your weapon.
Yeah.
But if you get past that and you're just kind of bopping around, just seeing what you can see, it's actually an enjoyable game. It's got a great OST. For the record, the OST can be accessible through Bandcamp. I know because I did it.
Nice.
And I honestly still had fun with the game. So that's where I find myself kind of torn on the final result of the review, because I know that I can see people buying this game and coming across the same issue I did regarding the weapons and say, this is stupid. There's not enough going on here. I'm bored of this game. But in my case, it was one of the things where, like, I still have had fun playing it. It was enjoyable for the sense that I knew I was just trying to get to the bottom of the dungeon. I wanted to see what was next, what new soundtrack item was going to pop up on the for the environment I was going to enter. And to be honest, I barely even utilized the other characters. I kind of used that girl with the time bombs and just never wanted to change, because even though the other two guys have useful abilities, time bombs can blow up walls. So if you find like an item behind a wall that you want to get to, but you don't feel like running around, just blow it up and then go pick it up.
So shortcut.
Exactly. You make you look for a way. I'll make a way, damn it. Shit.
Nice. And it sounds pretty cool. I certainly hope this shows up on other platforms eventually, because it sounds really, really cool. And I got to know, $10. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a definite try it minimum. I don't want to say buy it only because of my earlier nitpicky gripes. But if you're listening to this and you don't give two hoots about that, then it would upgrade to a buy. But I think it's at least worth trying, because it has that addictive quality to it that makes you want to do one more run into the dungeon. And I actually did kind of like the chibi-fied graphics of the characters too, with the boss sprites are a little bit more detailed. And honestly, I like them. It's a good game.
Nice. Plus, you have to enjoy the fact that someone put out a new Vita game.
That is very true. When you mentioned this game as up for option, I was really shocked, because the Vita is pretty much a Twilight System now. People will tell you that it's not dead, but then you point to the fact that most of the games coming out, if not all of the games coming out, are essentially ports or limited run games things. Yeah. So I'm hoping that there might be a few Japanese games that might crop up next year, because even though all the hype's on PS4 when it comes to Sony's camp, I'm still a fan of the system that they abandoned, they left to die.
Yeah. Shocker that Sony would release something and then, you know, just give up on it and ignore it. They've never done that before.
Hey, this was the final straw for me. PSP, they did it. When the Vita, I was like, okay, they're going to try again. And it's an awesome system. I'll buy this bad boy and see where it goes. And I was all excited about it. And at the time, I liked it almost more than the 3DS. The only reason the 3DS had more staying power, even though the Vita in hand, was because that two-screen and touchscreen mechanic wasn't replicated, which means they could have games that they just flat out couldn't do. But I still had high praise for the Vita. And then Sony was like, year one, we're done with this thing. We don't have any more games for it. They got their Uncharted. That's enough, right? Bullshit. And then all these Japanese companies kept it alive. But Sony, the actual manufacturer, left it to rot, which in some respects is what brings a lot of the system's charm to it. It's like, it really is the little system that could, because its father abandoned it. And it wandered the streets lonely and hungry. And people kept saying, here's a nibble. Here's a nibble. Here's a plate of spaghetti. I know you're hungry, Vita. Have a plate of spaghetti.
Oh, God.
It's from Nipponichi.
Oh, God. Yeah, it seems like everyone's moving on to the Switch now, which leads us to the next game to talk about. It is called Mujo, developed and published by Oink Games. Released November 30th on the Switch for $9.99. Mujo is a unique puzzle game with features that cannot be found in any other game. Let's start collecting tiles and erase them all to attack monsters. This game has no end. Enjoy whenever you want, as much as you would like. This is kind of like a match 3 style puzzle game, where there are going to be different tiles on a board, and you have to tap them to either give your troops experience or to deal damage to your opposing enemy, monster, whatever. The unique thing is that instead of just tapping tiles to make them disappear, you can also hold on a tile and say there's, you know, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 different attack tiles that are linked together. You tap them all, it'll do like 5 or 6 damage, whatever. If you hold them, it'll group them all together and throw a number on it, which is how much damage it would have done, but it pretty much saves it and it makes it more powerful. So if you can then link more of the tile to it, it'll be a more powerful attack. Or you can hold on it again and build it higher and higher and higher, which is what you need to do as the game moves on. There are, I want to say like 52, 53 stages, something like that in the game. Each stage has a whatever opponent you have to take out, like a soldier, there might be a chimera, or just, you know, whatever monster or soldier you have to take out. As you go further, their hit points are larger and larger and larger. So it's required pretty much that you have to start linking these tiles together and building them up and making them stronger and more powerful. And then some of the special monsters, like the Chimera that I mentioned, their hit points will regenerate after every turn.
So you have to keep a constant stream of attacks going, because if you, the moment you let up, they get their health back and you're starting from square one.
Yeah, you either need to constantly attack them, which many times you won't be able to just because there won't be enough tiles to match there, or you have to build up these tiles so much to the point where you pretty much one hit kill them.
Now, what is the game over condition for this guy? Like, can a monster fight back and hurt you?
I haven't found one. Nothing fights back. It's pretty much, it is one of the most chill puzzle games I've ever run into.
That's an interesting concept. So, like, because it sounds interesting, but then there's that weird hiccup of like, okay, so I get these cool, I got to fight these cool monsters using this chain mechanic, and I'm not sure if there's any other augmentation that comes in the game aside from that. You said level up soldiers or people, yeah, so I'm assuming there's like maybe like...
One of the tiles in the game are treasure chests, and you can spend, this leads to one of the gripes that I know a lot of people have with the game. You can spend a lightning bolt to open a treasure chest, or if you link three of them together, you can open it as a treasure chest. Or if you link three or more together, you can hold it down and turn it from a bronze chest into a silver chest, and then you could link silver chest to make gold chest, and so on and so forth. And as you unlock chests, they'll either give you new gods or I want to say they're gods. I haven't remembered any of the names for any of the characters in the game.
Greek? You mentioned Chimera. I was from there, yeah. Greek gods.
I believe they are all Greek gods.
Okay.
And as you unlock them, they'll have different abilities, and some of them may give you, you know, higher attack power. Some of them may eliminate all of, they have blank spots that'll show up, blank tiles where they'll disappear if you make a match next to them, but otherwise they're just in the way. You know, one of their abilities, you could spend a lightning bolt to get rid of all the blank tiles, or they also have bomb tiles on there, which, you know, some games a bomb to destroy a bunch of tiles might be good, but in this game, if they destroy tiles, they're destroyed. You don't get any kind of credit for destroying them. They're just gone. So if you have an attack tile that you've been building up for half a game and there's a bomb in its path and you detonate that bomb, you just fucked yourself.
Like, done deal. Watch the suffrage.
But even when you screw yourself over, there's, you know, the only thing you're losing is time, because it's basically, oh, well, I just got to start that back over. I haven't seen any kind of actual lose conditions. There may have been, you know, a handful of the more boss battles that are like, you have to win within 20 moves, stuff like that. But they're few and far between that I've seen. It's mainly just... Go ahead.
I was about to say, so you mentioned that there was no game over, but then you mentioned these boss battles would win in 20 turns or less. What happens if you don't win? Do you just...
I don't know. I didn't lose.
Oh, you never lost. There it is. I hate when that happens sometimes. Like, I'll play a game and they'll give me a lose condition, and I don't want to be the guy that finds out what happens. I'm like, no, I'll lose because I lost, not because I suicided to check the results. But
I'm honestly trying to think if I did run out of moves. It's possible I ran out of moves and then it just starts back over at 20, and the opponent's health regenerates. Oh, that's what it was. You got to zero, the opponent got full health, and you start over.
Oh, so you have to do it. Basically, you have to do it that amount of time just to beat the guy instead of having to do it all over again.
Yeah. Like, it didn't wipe out the work that you've done. All the tiles are still the same on the board. It doesn't reset anything. It just resets his health. That's it.
So you can essentially make a bunch of crash gems or exploding gems that are ready to go, and then once the clock restarts, like...
Pretty much.
So yeah. This is where I find myself in a weird place, like, and I'm curious about your take on it. So... They get this puzzle game with adversaries and soldiers and the means to power up and plan and modify, but there's zero risk involved. Like, essentially, you could get no upgrades and just play ad nauseum forever.
Well, the game started as a mobile game. Like, this is a mobile game port, which leads to a couple of my gripes with the game. So it's very much just a chill, relax kind of, you know, match these, just have fun. But some of the mobile trappings are still there, despite the fact that on mobile, it was a free-to-play game. On the Switch, it's a $10 game. those lightning bolts, which you can use to either unlock a chest or you could use your character's ability. You start with, you know, X number of them, and then every day you get five that are separate from the ones that you've banked up. Those are five you get every day. They're your free to use every day. Sometimes you might not use them at all. Like I had a stockpile between the ones that it starts you with, and then achievements that you earn in the game, they'll give you additional lightning bolts that you could bank up. And then again, the daily ones are completely separate. I barely use them, but I could see why people are annoyed, because you can buy more with real money.
Ugh.
I don't think it's needed at all, but the option is, like, there's an option, like a $48 bundle of them. I don't know why. I don't know why you would ever need that many in this game, but, you know, they're there if you want them. My other gripe with this game is that it is still formatted like a phone screen with, like, portrait style vertical format on a Switch screen that's ultra wide screen.
So it doesn't even utilize the Switch's screen real estate?
No.
Oh, Jesus, guys, like, come on.
Like, there's icons on there that I couldn't even find them for the longest time. I'm like, where the fuck is a menu in this game? There's very tiny little icons that you could tap at the bottom. Like, they could have put those on the sides. Or even better, they could have put an option in there for vertical orientation, where you turn the Switch tablet sideways and you play it vertically. That would have been fucking perfect for this game. As it stands, it's, you know, the game in the middle and then just a lot of empty real estate. They didn't change the UI to fit the Switch. They didn't really do anything to make it look or play better on the Switch. I mean, the touchscreen works well. The controller options work well. The game plays fine. It just, the translation from mobile to Switch, it feels like a missed opportunity to make it look and feel better. It just felt kind of lazy.
Yeah, like, there's a difference between, like, where, like, I remember there was a game that I think I reviewed it on your show. That was, like, that game called Pixel Links, where that was originally a mobile game. But when they moved it to the Switch, they took advantage of the Switch screen to make it a game that, whereas I didn't really want to deal with it on the mobile device, it was actually a lot of fun and intuitive to play on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
So you feel like that's the angle they should be shooting for if they want to market it to people that own the device.
Yeah. I mean, the Mujo is a lot of fun. I've been heavily addicted to it. It's one of those games that you could sit down, say you're going to play for 10 minutes and 2 hours passes. It's one of those just addictive zone out kind of puzzle games. Just the presentation, it I don't know. It just feels like such a lazy port over. They could have done so much more with the menus, with the UI, with the screen real estate. Even if they had the option to have vertical orientation with the screen, it would have been, you know, perfect. It's a huge screen. Use it instead of just having 60% of it nothing, just the background. $10, I'll still give it a try because it's a lot of fun. I'm addicted to it. I'm playing it constantly. I actually have it paused right now while I'm doing all this stuff.
There's such a weird trend of games lately I'm starting to come across and notice. Like, a friend of mine was telling me about another one today that is a different genre, but it fills that similar niche. And that's games that just kind of, I won't say they play themselves, but they're all technically Zenny games, where it's like you do a thing and the potential to lose is slim to none. And the whole point is just to constantly grow. Just to keep growing.
Idle, like, games.
The Plantera game from last week. Yeah, idle games. The one that he was playing was like a click quest game, I guess you'd call them, where you're just clicking monsters to get damage done to them. And then, like, this game where it's like you can just pretty much just do it and do it, but there's no penalty for it or anything like that. It's an interesting concept. It makes me wonder where it stemmed from.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying it's good or bad. Just, it's a curious trend to see it arise.
Yeah.
But
it's all Cookie Clicker's fault. But
Cookie Clicker, I love that name. It's bad.
You've never played Cookie Clicker?
Thankfully, no, because it probably would have dicked
me. Oh shit! You need to play Cookie Clicker, man.
I'm afraid to try. One of the games was like, I don't like this, but why am I still playing it?
Because Dude, Cookie Clicker was a game that I had just an open tab on my browser for well over a year.
God damn.
Yeah. Because it was, you just let it run and you can check on it once or twice a day, do shit. But yeah, Mujo, fun stuff. I would love to see them put out an update to just address the UI decisions. I can understand having the microtransactions in there. If people really, really want to get more lightning bolts, the options there, I don't think they're necessary. I don't think it's needed. And I think paying $10, you shouldn't have to, but whatever. The UI and the screen real estate, I would love to see addressed. Mm-hmm. So otherwise, try it. Good stuff. I enjoyed it. But next game to talk about is called Dust Off Heli Rescue 2, developed by Invictus Games, ported by Radaleika Games, published by Rainy Frog, released December 19th on PS4 for $14.99, released December 26th on Xbox One, self-published by Invictus Games. I think this is the most details I've ever had to give for just the developed and released. jump into the hot seat of a combat helicopter and fly behind enemy lines under heavy fire as you search for and rescue hostages. Upgrade each helicopter with more powerful guns, rockets, and missiles as you take the fight to the enemy. Purnell, tell me about Dust Off Heli Rescue 2.
Heli Rescue 2. Okay. Well, I'll go on to my thoughts later. The game itself is essentially a 2D scroller designed using what I believe is Minecraft real estate, like similar tools that were used to create Minecraft or operate Minecraft. And the idea is that you control a helicopter, either a combat type helicopter or a cargo type helicopter, to fulfill the mission's objectives and complete the stage. So, for example, a combat type helicopter would have a type of mission for that would be like, okay, there is a landing point that is being covered by a convoy, an enemy convoy. Fly out and blow up the convoy and then return to base. So you'll raise up from the helipad that starts you off by hitting the two trigger buttons and rise up, and then left and right trigger determines what direction you fly the copter. So if you let off of it, you'll descend. If you hold it down again, you rise while moving forward. And then the left and right stick turns the nose of the helicopter. So if you want to fly backwards and shoot backwards, or fly backwards and shoot forwards, you can do that if you need to. So that's kind of a cool concept there. And then, of course, when you come, if it's a rescue mission, however, instead of actually flying out and taking guys out, you'll choose a cargo copter, and the cargo copter will rise up and fly out. And then once it gets to the place where there may be some soldiers to rescue, you'll descend and you have to carefully land the helicopter by getting both ends down and slowly descend down. And then you pick up the people as they board your copter, fly back to base, deposit them, and keep going. So the combat in this game is odd, though, and this is where I was kind of shocked and surprised. So first and foremost, this is where I can make this comment. I originally heard about this game, and I thought it was going to be a 3D variation on the old game Cobra Command, which was a helicopter flight game on the NES, but I think Data East. So in that game, you could pretty much, again, rise up. You flow left and right. You could shoot at guys with a gun button. You could buy upgrades. And rescuing guys could get pretty dicey because you were under heavy fire half the freaking time. And in some respects, it still kind of is. But an odd complaint that I personally had was that combat is automatic. So if I have a combat type helicopter, you fly out and you can turn on or turn off guns. So if you turn it on, the gun is manned. And if you turn it off, the gun is unmanned. If you have the gun manned and you come across enemies, the gun will just start firing and it'll just hit the guy. They'll just keep shooting him until they blow up. And of course they're shooting at you. So the goal is to kind of stay out of the range of bullets if possible and eventually kill the guy. If you run out of bullets or get low on health, you can dock your helicopter at different landing spots on the map and then spend end game money to regenerate ammo or regenerate health. Now, this is not, at least unless there's a menu I didn't see, this is not freemium type money. This is actual in-game money and only in-game money. If you beat a level, you earn cash. Oh, yeah, tell me about it. I'd have been really livid then. Basically, you know, every time you beat a level, you get money and you get a star rating. one star comes from not dying. Another star comes from beating it within a time limit. And I think the third star is just beating a level, period. And this is how you unlock more levels in the game. You keep earning stars. You might get like maybe like 50 stars to unlock the next level, or 35 stars to unlock the next level. So that's your goal for redoing stages. But you do those things, you get money from beating the stages as well, and then that's the money you use to regenerate ammo and regenerate your health when needed during a level. So the other thing you can acquire in the game is something called a dog tag. Every level has 5 of them, and they're just hidden throughout the map. They might be on the ground or behind a building or what have you. And your goal is to kind of swoop down with the helicopter and just pick them up. And after you get 50, 100, or 150, you can unlock a unique hidden helicopter, like a UFO or a helicopter, like a special helicopter that has almost dang near max stats, health and handling, essentially. Yes, I take that back. The moon pad, the one I was thinking about, is like a moon device, has maximum handling, but it has piss poor health. I don't know why they would do that to you, but whatever. But so that's essentially how the game goes. Though I need to also mention that every couple of levels, you can unlock either a new helicopter or a new piece of weaponry that can be applied to assault helicopters. Gun pod, Gatling gun pod, rockets, or missiles. And they're differentiated by ammo count, from the rate of fire, and the amount of damage it actually does. So that's pretty much all the upgrades and unlocks you get in the game. And I did enjoy playing it here for a little bit, but maybe it's just me, but I was really, I feel like you lose something by not having control of your actual firing, like your actual gunplay. The fact that you can't actually fire your gun yourself.
I think I know why it's like that. When you mentioned, you know, getting the 3 stars and unlocking more levels through star progression, I thought it sounded like a mobile game.
Uh-huh.
It's a mobile game.
There it is. That explains it.
That explains game, the guns being handled automatically. It's meant for ease of use in a mobile situation. I can kind of understand why they brought it over that way. On console, just it might be too hard to have to, you know, reprogram a game completely to give you manual weapon control.
Yeah.
And it lets you focus on the dodging and the rescuing instead of trying to aim, because God knows helicopter controls are never the easiest in games. So trying to aim the chopper and, you know, aim the weapons and everything else, I think it's just an ease of use thing.
And I can kind of agree with you on that regard, then, at least, because even playing this game, I was having some moments with controlling the nose of the helicopter, because instinctively you want to hold left or right. But again, that's how you rotate. So sometimes I'll be like holding right to fly right, but for some reason it doesn't want to actually turn the nose of the helicopter, so I'll just be flying right. Like, I'm holding the button now. What's the problem? It's because I have to let go and then do the tap and then start flying. It's weird, but it works once you get used to it. So I feel it's another case of those reviews where I feel slightly torn, because I don't think it's bad at what it wants to do.
It's just not for everyone.
It's not for everyone. It has even though $15 is a ton of cash, it's still a pretty decent price tag for a console game that does what this does, knowing that other games can pretty much fulfill that niche for less. Though I don't think there are any other games that are like this on these consoles. Like, I can't think of another game that plays this way. Can you?
No, not at all.
So that's one perk that it does have going for it, though. There's a lot of stages, and it fulfills a unique niche that other games aren't providing for this console. So
for $15, what's your verdict?
If you're okay with the cost, it's definitely something to try.
Sounds good. I might grab it on Xbox. I didn't even know it was coming out on Xbox until I looked on the store today and saw it just released.
There you go.
Next game to talk about is called Arcade Archives versus Super Mario Brothers. Developed originally by Nintendo, the console port by Hamster Corporation, released December 22nd on the Switch for $7.99. Versus Super Mario Brothers is an action game released in 1986 by Nintendo. Mario and Luigi must go on a widespread adventure in order to rescue Peach from the clutches of Bowser. This version is from Nintendo Versus System, and the positions of enemies and items differ from the Nintendo Entertainment System version. You are hearing that correctly. This is the arcade version of Super Mario Brothers.
I do remember liking it, because if I remember correctly, you actually were on the same screen. You were racing each other.
No, that was the Super Mario Brothers Deluxe version.
Crap, my memory's terrible.
Yeah, this is just, you know, 8 worlds, 4 stages each, go through and beat the game. It's Super Mario Brothers. The big thing here is because it's the arcade version, things are a little trickier. Enemy positions are different in certain instances. Item positions are different. You know, if you thought there's going to be a mushroom in that one block there, it might not be there anymore. It might be a screen over, or it might be, you know, in a different question block instead of what you're expecting. If you think, oh, I'm going to jump there and it's going to be fine, guess what? There's going to be a Koopa Troopa there just waiting to jump on you and kick your ass. The blocks above the pipe in world 1-2, those are gone, so you can't get to the minus world anymore, even though, you know, that wasn't an actual feature. But yeah, it's just, it's different. There's even some stages that are completely removed from the NES version and were replaced in the arcade version with levels that we would now know from the lost levels, Super Mario Brothers 2.
Wait, so there were lost levels stages in the versus Mario Brothers game?
Yeah.
Wow, that's unexpected, but that's actually kind of cool, too.
Yeah, they put them in there to make it a more difficult experience because, you know, arcade machine supposed to eat quarters. One of the features we talk about a lot in the hamster games in the Arcade Archive series is all the dip switches you could go in and mess around with, you know, give yourself infinite lives, infinite continue, stuff like that. There's not much in the way of dip switches with this game, and everything that's there just seems to make it harder. Like, the default is 3 lives, 100 coins gives you a 1-up, the timer goes, you know, the normal speed, and you get 3 continues. The dip switches allow, or 3 continues or 4 continues, one of them. Anyway, the dip switches let you switch it from 3 lives to 2, change the clock speed from normal to fast.
So how much money do you want to milk out of the player?
Pretty much. They let you change the number of coins for a 1-up higher than 100. You can't go lower, but you could go higher.
Jesus.
They give you the option to give yourself less continues. It is still a tough, tough game. And because it's harder and it's different than what you're used to with the NES version, you're going to run into issues with this game where you're going to be like, I didn't expect that jump. You've been playing a game one way for 30 years, and then you play this version, and there these minor changes. They fuck with your confidence.
I do kind of get a chuckle out of the idea that now I'm hearing all this. I'm almost positive I played this in the arcade as a kid, but it's kind of funny that they call it versus Mario Brothers, but there's no versus to it, right?
There's still the 2-player, you know, you take turns. It's just the versus was their arcade name.
Oh, okay.
It was like versus Mario Brothers, versus Balloon Fight, versus Super Mario Brothers, versus Excite Bike. Everything was versus.
I remember versus Excite Bike. So now I get what you're saying now. So it was just like the line of game title.
Yeah. I guess the way to differentiate it from the standard version to the arcade version. And something else I noticed with this game is the color palette. Because it was the arcade version and not the NES, it didn't have as limited color palette as the home console version. And, like, the first time I got a Fire Flower, is like, wow, that's really orange looking. Like, the skin looks different. The turtles are bright. It's noticeably more vibrant than what you would see from the NES version. It's really, really cool. And given we have never seen this game available on a home console in any way, for $8, I dare say versus Super Mario Brothers is a must own. It is essential in every way because it's never been released like this before.
And there are a lot of like Super Mario Bros. Aficionados out there like that enjoy like the speed runs and the like. And if, as you said, it's true of being about how it's a remix of sorts with different levels that weren't in the original game. And different block placement, item placement. This can essentially become a new speedrun challenge.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a whole new game. It is still very much Super Mario Brothers. You know, the worlds and the levels are going to look what you remember they look like, there's just going to be slight differences, you know, aside from the stages that were completely removed and given different stages, of course. But this is still Super Mario Brothers. Oh, one other fun thing. You know the infinite one-up trick with the turtles at the end of the one stage?
Yeah, on 3-1.
Those are now Goombas.
Oh, so they got rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sly devils.
Indeed. But yeah, $8. I really think if you're a Nintendo fan of any kind, if you have ever enjoyed retro Nintendo gaming, this is a 100% must own, because this is the only way to get it, unless you somehow track down an old arcade machine, which you're not going to.
I was say, you don't issue the challenge, because someone's going to take you up on it.
Look what I got. It only cost me $4,000. Well,
you'll get like 10 emails and like, hey, put me on the show. I got to tell everybody I won your challenge. I
think the $8 would have been a better option, but you know.
True.
But yeah, really, really cool stuff. I love these Arcade Archives releases, and the fact that Nintendo is on board with these has me so excited for what other crazy arcade games are going to see. I know Punch-Out's going to be coming eventually, so I'm looking forward to that one as well.
Well, without Mike Tyson, what's the point?
No, this is the arcade Punch-Out with like the wireframe dude.
Wireframes. Yeah, I do remember that. It was a cool game, honestly, even back then.
Shit's going to be baller.
Mario.
Oh man. Anyway, one last game to talk about is called Bridge Constructor Portal, developed by Clockstone, published by Head Up Games in partnership with Valve. Released December 20th on Steam for $9.99. As a new employee in the Aperture Science Test Lab, it's your job to build bridges, ramps, slides, and other construction in 60 test chambers, and get the bendy safely across the finish line in their vehicles. Make use of many portal gadgets to make it through the test chambers unscathed. The bridge is a lie.
I'm laughing at it. I thought it was chuckly.
So I know a lot of people were surprised when they saw this mashup.
Honestly, I think it's cool. I didn't realize until you just said it, though, that Valve had nothing to do with it. But as far as like, aside from like the collaboration aspect of it, but it's a pretty cool game. I have a friend who is rather obsessed with bridge construction games lately. He likes to take videos of them and all and show them online to friends. And up until now, I had really no interest in even bothering to try them. But this game is actually pretty cool. The idea is that, you know, as you said earlier, you are working at Aperture Science, and surprisingly, yes, he got the original voice of GLaDOS to come back and voice it again.
Ellen McLean.
So, that's right. And this whole, and honestly, it's some very hilarious dialogue. I've missed that voice so much. So honestly, I'd almost say it's worth a buy just to get that back. the idea is that you are working there, and GLaDOS is giving you some BS about how a poor and awful employee you are and the like. But your goal is to essentially build bridges. And every time you go to a level, it's like, okay, here's the environment. You get like basically scaffolding and suspension cable. I don't know what the technical term they gave before the game, but that's what they are basically. Suspension cables and scaffolding. And you essentially are building bridges to initially get one vehicle across from the beginning of the stage to the exit stage of the stage. And then after you've done that, you have the option of getting a convoy across. So it'll be like another 5 or 6 vehicles that also want to get across. And initially, I thought, what the heck is the point of that? If one could get across, obviously 6 could. I don't see the issue here. Well, then, that's where the fun of Portal comes into play, because they start coming up with some really crazy and bizarre level design. So they introduce a number of elements from the Portal games, such as the little turret men, and most specifically and importantly, the portals themselves. So there will be levels where you will have like laser beams set up that will kill your robot people if they go through, and portals where if you enter from one side, you'll exit from the corresponding colored opposite end of the portal, which can result in things like vehicles crisscrossing each other in the air. So if your timing is wrong on how you set the bridge up, the vehicles will crash in the air. Wouldn't be a problem for one vehicle, but for 6, yeah, you got an issue. Or you might have it built up in such a way that it couldn't properly support the weight of the vehicle, but just through sheer coincidence, it just barely managed to get to the other side of the map, but then if five other vehicles attempted, the bridge would fall apart. So it ends up testing you not only for competency, but for efficiency. Like, how well does this thing actually work? It's not just about getting a guy across, it's about making it a long-lasting structure. So it gets to be pretty challenging. Again, it's very simple as far as like what they give you. You get cables and scaffolding, but you have to use that for all sorts of manners of things. So again, you get the ramps you set up for vehicles to shoot over the side of so they can land and go into a portal, come back out. It's the exit. If you come across a level where you have to deal with, you know, turrets, you have to actually create reflection surfaces for bullets to ricochet off of, or just outright avoid getting hit, getting your guys hit by them. They'll just deflect them for you. And it gets to be pretty fun because, again, for something so simple, it can be pretty tough. There were some levels where I was stumped out the frickin' wazoo trying to figure out what to do. And it seemed like it would be so straightforward at first. I was freaking wrong. But interface-wise, it's actually not that difficult. It's not complicated. They designed it in a way where it's very smooth and straightforward. It has controller support and mouse support. You can remove pieces of equipment, add pieces of equipment, the whole nine yards with very little difficulty or challenge. You can save constructions. So if you get to a level and you built it up and you want to walk away, you can save the construction and come back later. I'm not sure if you can actually record video footage or not. Maybe that's what save construction is for all I know, because I've also seen it save construction by just leaving the screen and coming back. But I'm hoping that one of the functions in the game that I just never looked into and found was the ability to save a construction setup and share it with friends online, because I think it'd be cool to be able to beat a level in a manner that was completely unintended. Just be like, look what my convoy can do. I use half of the components that you have to use. How does it track that? Well, at least I'm assuming this is why they did it, because I saw another purpose for it. Every time you place a piece down or a scaffolding piece down or any of that stuff, you generate a base cost. And when you finish a level, they tell you how much money it costs you to beat the stage. So the more parts that are required for your little, you know, Rube Goldberg machine to function, the more, you know, the lower, quote unquote, your score is. Lower being higher, because the higher dollar value is worse. So your goal to beat your friends and make a really impressive setup is to build a bridge that can get all six vehicles across that requires as little money to build as possible. Unless there's a secret unlock that I'm not familiar with, it unlocks nothing. But I can still see it being pretty enticing for people who just want to feel creative and dabble. Because once you get past solving the actual puzzles themselves, there's nothing left to do. But if you want to challenge friends for that low score,
games like Bridge Constructor are all about the score and doing it as cheaply as possible and fun stuff like that.
Oh, so the other games are like that too. Mm-hmm. Like, they have monetary base. Okay. Yeah.
Where you can't go over cost, stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Got to make sure you use the right materials, set it up the right way, go as cheap as you can, get them stars.
There it is in that case, and that's what this is all about. That's most likely what that was going to happen to be, too. Like, you only have a certain amount of money or something to do it. But I ultimately found myself having a great deal of fun with it. Like, up until this time, I had never played a bridge construction game, and I honestly didn't even see what the fun could possibly be. After all, it's not even like a fantasy game. You're just literally building a bridge so a cement truck can cross it. Like, oh, whoop-de-freaking-do, right? But honestly, for someone like me, it just needed that weird fantasy element or something sci-fi or wacky to finish adding the code base. Someone's like, well, I was talking about Farming Simulator a couple months ago on the show. I was like, you're a freaking farmer. What's so fun about that? But if you slap like a freaking like kid with a blue hat backwards and forest gnomes or some shit, all of a sudden farming is fun. Mm-hmm. You know? Same with Bridge Constructor. I think if a person doesn't really find themselves looking to want to build bridges to transport, you know, vehicles across like old country roads, well, slap GLaDOS on it and some turrets and some portals. And not only do you get a couple pretty wacky puzzle concepts that would not likely exist in a normal bridge simulator constructor game, but you also get that added dose of wackiness in fantasy that turns a game that just seems bland to a game that brings a lot of promise and interest to the player. And that definitely worked on me, because I think this game is easily worth $10. It is a great time.
Nice. And, well, I was just going to ask, $10, what's your verdict? But it sounds like you already know.
Pick it up. That's what it is. It's definitely worth the money. You'll enjoy visiting with GLaDOS again. You'll be wondering where the hell is Val with Portal 3.
Yeah, no shit.
Like, I don't even need a story. Just give me more fucking Portal. You know, that's like the easiest gig for them right now. It's like, look, just design some puzzles and make GLaDOS say dumb shit every once in a while. I don't even want a plot. Shell is nice, but we don't need her to have a story. We just want her to run around with a gun. There it is. Done deal. Make it happen.
Indeed. I know the game's also out on mobile. It's $5 on iOS. I'm not sure what the Android pricing is because I'm not an Android guy. And then console versions will be following in 2018 as well. So.
Oh, cool. So a little bit for everybody.
Indeed. Head Up Games is bringing it with the Bridge Constructor. So I'm pretty excited about that one.
Yes. That means people...
But Pernell, always good having you on chatting Vidya Games with me. Everybody else, stick around. We're going to take a quick musical break, and I will be back with Phil Moore. Older people like me might remember from Nick Arcade. That was a fun chat.
I thought you were making, I thought for a second you were just like some random guy named Phil Moore. You're actually talking about the Nick Arcade Phil Moore.
Yeah, Phil Moore is going to be on after a quick song. I'm going to be back talking with him because he's going to be at MAGFest.
Man, if you haven't, you might want to slip this up, but did you interview him yet?
Yes.
Dang it. I was going to say, you should be like, hey, for now, but growing up, people used to tease me because Phil Moore looked and acted exactly like my best friend in grade school to the letter.
So, yeah, I had a couple of other guys who were like, oh man, I want to get in on that. I want to get it. When are you doing it? Can I join? And I wouldn't have been able to have anyone join anyway because he was visiting family in the Baltimore area, didn't have access to Skype. So it had to be like an old fashioned phone conversation. So the audio quality is not going to be flawless, but it's a really, really cool chat. And everyone should stick around and listen to that because fucking Nick Arcade, baby.
That's right. That's the reason I got a TurboGrafx.
Yeah, we talk about all the fun stuff of like kids playing Sonic on there and low bids and going into the video zone. And he does the song. And
do you talk about why kids were so god awful with the games on there?
We brought that up. And the fact that he had to make sure to go out of his way to encourage the kids and be that support for them. Because, you know, these are kids who've never been on TV before in front of all these strangers. The pressure is on them and they have to go through and do this stuff. And if they screw up, they're going to feel like shit. So that was Phil's job, was to be like the moral support of these kids who did horribly in games.
And that does make sense. And I used to question that. I used to wonder, are they playing poorly because they're on the spot or are they just really this bad?
Yeah, mix.
Because there was some crap. I mean, like, Sonic gave me, like, get 15 rings.
Yeah.
I couldn't freaking do it. I'm like, you can run, you can hold right and get 15 rings. I don't know what to tell you.
15 rings in 30 seconds.
Like, just do it. Run, jump once, break a damn monitor, and get 3 rings. Oh, my God, it's done. But, nope, these kids were so bombing
good.
Out.
So good. But yeah, you should, Pernell, you should stick around and listen to that interview as well.
Maybe I will, because I need to hear what he has to say.
Goddamn right you will. So everyone else, stick around. Quick song. We'll be back. Pernell, any final words?
Now I'm just thinking about Nick Arcade, so I'm kind of done. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everyone. My guest at this time, joining, some of us may have grown up with him, the host of Nick Arcade, will be appearing at MAGFest this January, Phil Moore. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today, sir?
Joe, man, oh my gosh, man, I'm doing great. Good to be on, man. Good to kind of finally meet you over the airwaves. I guess I'll be seeing you shortly at MAGFest, man. But, dude, man, I'm doing well. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited. I kind of just found out within the past week or so that you were going to be attending MAGFest. I grew up, I'm a child of the 80s and the 90s, so I grew up with Nick Arcade. I was always jealous that I couldn't be on it. So maybe this might be my chance to finally experience it in person. My first question is, how did this come together with you coming to MAGFest?
Well, a couple of years ago, I was invited to a place called, okay, see, oh my gosh, this is going to be embarrassing. I can't remember the name of the arcade that I went to in Pennsylvania. And if this guy is listening, oh my gosh, he's going to hate my guts. He's going to hate my guts because I can't remember the name of his arcade. But it's an arcade. And man, oh man, the dude's name is Brandon, and he's awesome, and you got to go to his arcade. It's more than just an arcade. They actually have a separate area that's kind of like a stage room, where it's a stage, and you have room to set it. It's the kind of thing where if you were watching like, it's a little bit smaller than like a movie would have, like at a 1950s high school gym. You know what I mean? So it's like a space where it's a stage up front, chairs, people can sit down, and they have guests. Different people come in, celebrities, people that do video games, people who aren't even associated with video games. I think they had like Weird Al Yankovic there one day or whatever.
Oh, wow.
And this guy asked, hey, Phil, you know, could you come out? Guy's name is Brendan Spencer. That's his name. Brendan Spencer. And if you like Google him and look up arcade, you'll find this place. The place now, he's got two. He's got one in Pennsylvania, one in New York. And he asked me to come out and be the guest for that particular weekend. And I'm thinking, okay. So most of the times, I've done other cons, and I've done Comic-Con, I've done gaming expos across the country. And normally you have like a segment of time, and then maybe you do some autographs, maybe you do a panel, maybe you host a video game. But this guy, this place was just like 5 hours, no more, one-man show. I had no idea, but I got to tell you, man, seriously, the thing that's it's really cool about this kind of like retro thing coming back, you know, I like to say 90s are the new black, is that everybody had so many questions. Everybody's had so much enthusiasm. So many people wanted to like relive those moments or talk about those things that were their childhood. They wanted to find out about me. They wanted to find about Nick Arcade. We had some people there who were like programmers now, wanted to know the technical aspects of how the show works. We had people there that were just like our classic gamers, and they wanted to talk to me about old school games. The people there that were interested in television and hosting. So it was like, by the time we got done, I'm up and thinking, how in the world am I going to show 5 hours straight? And the next thing you know, the guy's saying, so we gotta go. It's time to go. And the artist is like, you know, last call, people get out. And they're like, no, we've got more questions.
So, oh, man.
So it's interesting. I'm humbled by the enthusiasm that people bring to events that I'm at. Because, look, just keeping it real, this is like something I did 25 years ago. And the fact that, you know, out of all the different shows that have ever been on television, including all the shows on Nickelodeon, this little crazy 8-bit game show still resonates with people to this day, man. Like, I'm humble, and I'm always happy to, like, you know, just talk with people. So one of the guys associated with MAGFest came to that event, and this was like about 2 years ago. He talked to me about being there. And just through a variety of different scheduling things, we weren't able to work it out. Until now. I mean, it's just really one of those things. Like, can you come this year? Well, what's going on? And we'll have you do this. And I'm like, well, how about if you do that? Well, we don't have, we've already got overbooked. Well, how about let me check it out next year? Anyway, this year was the year in which time and availability came together.
The stars aligned.
Yeah, exactly, man. Exactly.
So what are you going to be doing at MAGFest?
Well, according to what they're telling me, there's a bunch of things. Thing number one, I'm going to be doing just a straight up panel, kind of like what I'm doing with you, except with a whole bunch of people live on stage, running out in the audience, asking questions, talking to people, telling them stories, whatever. Then of course, the typical thing that you do with all of these events are you have a moment where you're doing pictures and signing autographs. I've got pictures of them signing, you know, that kind of thing. But then the Vieste de Resistance is I will be emceeing the game MagFest Versus. And basically it's like elements that people will be familiar with from Nick Arcade being played live by people there in the venue. And it's funny because there's a couple of, like, I guess, reigning competitors that have sort of made a name for themselves in past competitions. And then if everybody checks out the MagFest website, I actually shot a promo for them. And they had to tell me the names of these folks, and I was like, wow, are these dudes serious? I'm like, oh yeah, this is like the Grudge match of all Grudge match. It's like Hulk Hogan and Bruno Sammartino. It's like The Rock in his heyday against John Cena. These two are gonna go toe to toe and head to head, and the games and the Q&A and the video challenges. They're all gonna be reminiscent of what people will finally be familiar with Nick Arcade. And the fun part about it, you know, they've been doing this for years. The fun part about it is I'll be doing it once again live in front of people. So it's, you know, despite the fact that these guys have put together a great sort of competition and they've been doing it themselves, they're bringing out the pièce de résistance of competitors. People from the audience will be able to compete also, and emceeing the thing, holding it down. Master ceremonies of the event will be me. And it's so funny because in the words of Ace Ventura, it fits like a glove. I mean, it's amazing to me. Like, the first time I got asked to do any event like this was just a couple years ago. You know, people have asked me, like, man, where have you been? Have we gone to these other cons? You've seen all these other people from, you know, the Nickelodeon days in the 90s, but you've never showed up. And my honest answer, seriously, is I didn't know anybody cared. Like, I honestly didn't. And just like the guy who came to the event I did in Pennsylvania and saw me, the guy from MagFest who came to the event in Pennsylvania and saw me, it's like, as I post stuff on social media or as people show up at various things, they're kind of like, dude, they're still around. You're still doing this. And I kind of go, well, I mean, I was asked to do it again. I never wanted to stop.
Do you think it's a generational thing?
I don't think it's a generational thing with the fans or the audience. I don't think it's a generational thing at all. I really just felt like, I said it already, but seriously, man, I didn't think anybody cared. It was a fun thing. Look, the 90s Nickelodeon, let's just keep it real here, was the best time in the history of Nickelodeon.
It was, bar none.
To watch it, right now, yeah, exactly, to watch it, to be a part of it. It was like unlike anything that's ever happened before or since. And, but look, I'm not one of these people that, like, sits around and goes, you know, and here's Phil's greatest hit. It was like, it was fun. I was very fortunate, man. I mean, they hooked me up with a lot of things. I mean, you know, it was a great opportunity. It launched my career. You know, I was able to make some money. I was able to pay off my student loans in college.
Always a positive. You know? Always a positive.
You know, exactly. So things are, like, really cool. And so when it got done, And it was over. I mean, I don't know if anybody's going to get this reference. If y'all don't get this reference listening, Google it. It's like Menudo. You know what I mean?
Oh, God.
You remember Menudo?
Yeah. Man, Ricky Martin's old stomping grounds.
Ricky Martin got started. Now, for the other time, I said Menudo was an all-boy band, and it went on for years, but the thing with Menudo was, what, once you turned 16,
was it 14 or 16? I know it was something there.
I can't remember, but it was, like I said, Google it. But basically, if you started with this, like, five-member boy band, As soon as the oldest member reached whatever the cap-off point was, you had to go and they'd bring on a new member that was younger. So it was like, you basically, the reason why the reference was said, it was like Menudo is, you had your time, you knew what you were walking into, and since you know what you're walking into, don't be pissed when your time is up. Smile, take the money, wave to the folks, and leave.
Exactly. I gotta say, that is one of the things I'm sad about with the 90s Nickelodeon, was everything only had like 2 or 3 years, and then that was it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the philosophy back then was, and I think it's pretty sound, because look, in 90s Nickelodeon, the team of people that were involved in every aspect of Nickelodeon are some of the most creative and smart individuals I've ever met. And I'm talking like to what we consider the most mundane task, from the person who was figuring out the recipe for slime at the Nickelodeon tours to the person who was figuring out programming schedule at Viacom in New York. It despite the diverse difference in these things, these people shared like a common goal. And it was almost like there was like this connection, this psychic connection where everybody was like, whatever your job is, everything would lead to the same goal in this creative thing that they were doing. And for me, it's like to be able to be pulled into that, because that's what it was. It was like, I just auditioned. That's all I did. I wasn't one of the founders. I wasn't a groundbreaking anything. I was a dude who, like, my agent said, there's an audition. I'm like, okay, I'll go. that was it, you know? It was like no other time before. And I don't think it's generational. I think it just has to do with, like I said earlier, man, I think it just has to do with certain shows and certain, you know, things connect and they stick. And I don't know what makes the difference between one or the other. Like, why does one show, because there were the shows that have been on Nickelodeon that have been on longer than Nick Arcade had ever been. And if I bring them up, people go, oh yeah, I kind of remember that. But then there are other shows that like weren't necessarily on as long as some other shows. And it doesn't matter if they were only on for like 1 or 2 seasons. People are like, oh, that show, that was my jam. Like, I remember that, you know?
Yeah, look at something like Salute Your Shorts that only ever had 2 seasons, but it's still one of the most loved Nick shows that have ever been out.
Ever. Exactly. Exactly, man. There are some shows that, like I said, have been on forever. And it's weird because, and I think it has to do with the show. Because like, you know, I was talking with Kurt Fogg. He went through the same thing. Legends of the Hidden Temple, like one season, and everybody remembers that show.
That really only had one season?
I need to Google that too. I can't remember. If it's not one, it's two. But like, that's all Nick Arcade had too. That's
it. Wow.
That's it. Nick Arcade only had 2 seasons. I think it is 2. I just checked. I grabbed my phone and took a look. Legends had 2 seasons only. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And yet, like, what's his name? Mark Summers and I were talking, and then years ago I had a conversation with Michael Malley about how Michael Malley, everybody remembers him from Guts, Global Guts. But the first show we ever did on a Nickelodeon was called Get the Picture.
I friggin' loved that show so much, by the way. I loved Get the Picture.
Yes. Okay. So here you have the same host, the same talented host doing the show. And some people remember it, some people don't. Then you come around with Guts, it's an explosion. You know, after Nick Arcane, toward the end of the 90s, like 1999, I hosted another show called You're On. It was a hidden camera game show. Most people don't remember that. You know, it was kind of like the predecessor to Punk, sort of, but with a competition element. Hmm. And most people don't remember it. It's still the same me. It's still the same studio. It's still the same network. And just like Mark and I were talking about Double Dare versus What Would You Do? People remember What Would You Do. People had a great time with What Would You Do. But, you know, right now he's on a personal tour running a documentary about himself. And the biggest thing people will talk about is, in respect to his TV career, is Double Dare. And it's interesting, like, what connects? Why one? It's the same person. I'm the same guy that did these couple of shows. He's the same guy that did these couple of shows. Mike's the same guy that did these couple of shows. But for some reason, one just hit. So that's why I have to go, I can't even take credit for it as the host, because I was the same guy on both shows, just like these other guys.
Yeah.
But something just connects. And I don't know if it's right time, right place, but it just hits and it sticks. And it doesn't matter if you had a half a season. You know, these people know what they like. They know what meant, you know, something to them, what was special to them. And, you know, you want that thing that you remember made you go yay when you were a kid.
Do you think the video game element helped with Nick Arcade kind of being a timeless childhood staple of all of ours?
Well, the thing about Nick Arcade, my initial answer is yeah, but at the same time, part of me kind of goes no. Out of all of the shows, game shows, I should say, Nick Arcade is actually the one that is that really dates itself. It, out of all the shows, it's the one that doesn't hold up the best with respect to time. Like, you can watch episodes of Figure It Out, and aside from not knowing who the, maybe, you know, if you're a younger generation now, you might not know who the celebrities are, but let's just say we don't tell you that the panel is celebrities. It's just people. You can still watch that show and watch the panel try to guess or try to figure out whatever the thing is, and the show still works. You aside from maybe the way people are dressed, you really wouldn't be able to tell if it's 1996, you know, or 2016. You know what I mean? The
yeah.
same thing with Dust. You know, if you woke up, you know, if you woke up, you just landed on Earth, and somebody said, "Watch this show," and you were watching, you know, Guts. You wouldn't really be able to tell, or even Double Dare. But if you know it's 2017, and you're watching somebody play a game like Sonic the Hedgehog 1 in the world in which video games take, then all of a sudden people go, "Oh man, that's old as dirt right there. Look at that. That's real. That's grandpa." It's like, it doesn't age well. But here's the thing. It's like classic video games, man. They're like the new classic symphony. You know, like Mozart wrote stuff and all of these, you know, all of these symphonies. And these things are like, you know, super old. You know, we wrote this thing back, you know, turn of the century. And yet we listen to it now and it's like a fine wine. It gets better with age. Well, I think your old Nintendo 64 cartridges, that's like the fine wine of the 90s generation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's old, but like you open up that box, you go and grab yourself that Star Fox for your N64. You put it up to your nose. You sniff the cork, you know? You shake it around and look at the bouquet, you know? You go and you get that Paperboy video game. You take it out the box and then you blow on the bottom of that game cartridge. You slide that sucker in.
One of the games you mentioned, the original Sonic the Hedgehog, I gotta say, every time I watch Nick Arcade, and you know, they did a quick pan of all the games that the kids could select from when they had the challenge, and I saw Sonic the Hedgehog, and one of the kids didn't pick that game, I wanted to punch him in the throat. How do you not pick Sonic the Hedgehog when that, you know, you have your choice of any of the games? You go with Sonic. What is it?
Dude, you touch on something that seems to be the universal binding thread with every Nick Arcade fan. No matter who you are, no matter how timid you are, how nice you are, you may have grown up to be a monk, but when you were a kid, you wanted to punch some 10-year-old in the head for not picking Sonic. Everybody, but here's one of my favorite episodes that happened. There was a kid on there. This is a true story, man. There was a kid on there, and he was talking about, like, you know, when I do the little interview. All right, so Bobby, what do you like to do? Man, I like to play video games. Oh, okay, little Bobby. You know, you got kids, and you can have a good time here today. Yeah, what's your favorite game? Oh, my favorite game is Sonic the Hedgehog, man. I play that game all the time. I can beat my brothers. It's a really cool game. So then we're sitting up there. He partnered up with some girl. I don't remember her name. Not even Bobby. But they land on video challenge. Video challenge, you get to come and play here with me. They come over to the video challenge area, and I ask the kid, I go, who's going to play and who's going to write? And the kid goes, oh, that's the answer. I'm playing Sonic the Hedgehog. I'm like, I bet you are, boy. I bet you pooping big Sonic the Hedgehog right now, ready to play this game. We high five. We walk over to it. I grab the car. Kids, the game was a challenge. You got to get a billion points in 30 seconds. He's like, I can do it, so I do this all day long in my sleep. So I turn to his partner and I go, okay, you got 50 points. You need the wager of your 50 points. How many do you think you're going to wager when your teammate beat the Wizards challenge? And this girl wagers 5.
What?
5.
Oh, my God. What the hell?
It was the first time I've ever saw a live studio audience of 12-year-olds be restrained from saying, what the F? It was the first time I ever thought we'd have to bleep an episode of Nick Arcade.
That would have been amazing, by the way, to bleep an episode of Nick Arcade. Just the kid is like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why would you put 5 points? Are you shitting me? And the kids at home are like, Daddy, what did he say?
The dude has been talking all from the moment I did the interview. Yeah, Phil, I got a big chubby for Sonic. And then his partner goes, I wager 5.
5 points. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. But everybody is, I find that funny too, just as people talk to me, everybody's got a story. If it isn't Sonic, it's about something in which they watch these kids play from home and watch what they would do. And like literally they had to contain themselves from like throwing something at the TV in frustration. And maybe that's why Nick Arcade is so nostalgic for people. Nick Arcade, the show where contestants piss you off. Maybe that's, you remember it because you have an emotional attachment to something and you can't figure out what it is. Maybe with a little therapy, you realize that there's a penny on episode 17. I don't know.
Nick Arcade, everybody's first experience of backseat gaming.
Exactly. I never heard of game rage before until I talked to the 30-year-olds that come out to the game cons and expos that I do and realized, yeah, man, I never had road rage before. But I could kick a 12-year-old of a video game back in the day.
Just and sitting at home, it's like, press the jump button, you stupid kid. What are you doing?
Mom and dad come in, why are you cuffing again? It's okay, Mom.
This friggin' kid, I keep yelling at the screen. I'm like, climb the ladder. Climb the coins, man. At the top of the ladder. Climb the ladder, kid. What are you doing?
Oh, man, giving instructions and people doing the exact opposite. Go forward. Okay, that's backwards. Go forward. Okay, reach to the left. Okay, that's to the right.
No, your other left.
Your other left. Now, I might be able to understand right and left. I can understand that. Because you get disoriented in the video zone and the way it was set up, it took a little bit of getting used to. And basically, the contestants only have the day of shooting to kind of do a practice run through. Okay, so I'll give you left and right, but up and down?
Hey, gravity is
up and down.
Gravity is a tricky, tricky concept for children, I guess. How many times during Nick Arcade did you have to, like, bite your tongue that you see a kid just doing the dumbest things possible and just in the back of your mind, it's like, what am I doing? Why? Why can't this kid? What is wrong with him?
I got to tell you. Okay, to check this out, I got to tell you, honestly, people, I get that asked a lot. But I got to be real honest, man, and you just got to take my word at it. I never thought about that at all because one of the things that I was really conscious of as a game show host, it was the first time I'd ever done television at all. I'd done stand-up comedy. So my instinct was to be like a stand-up comic and be real sarcastic and say something that was inappropriate. But I learned, like, from the first day, okay, Phil, that was really funny, but you can't crack on a kid on television.
Kids go home, they're like, Phil Moore's a real dick.
Phil Moore said I would never ever get laid. You know? But then, you know, again, they were really good with, like, they were really good with teaching you the art of doing a Nickelodeon show. And then there were other people there who were before me, like Mark Summers, who taught me some extra skills with respect to the mechanics of hosting a game show. Because although the image might be, oh, it's kind of cheesy, or it's kind of, you know, whatever. The thing is, it actually, because of things having to do with rules, fairness of play, regulations governing, you know, fair play and things of that sort, you really have to be really specific about how you actually monitor the game and how you, run the thing. You are the master ceremony. So whenever I find a kid that were doing something that was kind of like, honestly, my first thought was, okay, how can I encourage this team to like stay in the fight? Because like for the kid who wagered 5, you just realized that you blew a chance to like open up a lead.
Oh yeah.
The worst thing to happen on television is to have a blowout because somebody got discouraged. You know what I mean? Like, as a viewer, like, this is, okay, I'm putting on my producer hat right now. Look at that. See, I'm not even being funny. I'm being serious. The producer hat is, you want the game to be fun. You want it to be intriguing. You want it to be something where you're like, as a viewer, you're on the edge of your seat. You're trying to play along. You're cheering, you're booing, you're yelling, whatever it is you're doing at home. But when you're sitting up there and a kid has gotten this, like, his hopes shattered, and it doesn't feel like from the way they're acting that they feel like they've got a chance in the world to like, you know, somehow even come close or, you know, save face. It begins to show. You can see it. You can see it in the gameplay. And as a viewer, then as an episode, it becomes bad TV. It becomes boring for everyone to watch, and it kind of becomes painful for the person to endure the rest of the time to go through this minutia that looks like they're going to get slaughtered. So honestly, having learned how to host the show, like I said, Nickelodeon, you know, did some really cool teaching on how to do that. Mark Summers gave me a lot of good advice. It was really about becoming the real MC and learning how to keep the game play exciting, to keep encouraging the people, make them aware of certain rules, let them know that, you know, you're not out of it. Something as simple as, okay, you just wagered 5 points, but you know what? Show's only halfway done. It's a lot more show. Let's go ahead and check the score and play some more. Then, you know, it's like that kind of thing kind of says, yeah, I suck, but that's okay. It's not over yet. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
I honestly focused on that. It was automatic because you could see, like, as a viewer, you're sitting up there going, gee, that was really dumb. I, as a host, see, oh my gosh, this kid's gonna start crying. You know?
Has that ever happened?
You didn't want that. No. And I never let it happen. There's always something that, you know, I tried to do. Like somebody asked me one time, man, those songs you did, they were fun, but didn't you feel crazy doing it? I said, yes, but that was the whole point. Because for a kid being on TV for the first time ever, standing in a room with like 400 people watching them, lights, camera, that's nerve wracking enough, plus play a game. So they already are feeling a little insecure about even being on television. And I stopped and said, look, if you look at what I'm doing and you think that's goofy as all get out, then there's no way you're going to look as crazy as me. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, the biggest nut job in the room was Phil Moore. So you would always feel elevated as a contestant, as a kid on the show. You would never walk away feeling beaten or discouraged or like, man, I just got run over, you know? And so that became like the grown up in me actually working. So it was interesting how in the midst of all of this crazy and goofiness and fun and silly songs and video challenges and blah, 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 there was actually, I was actually working.
You know,
there was actually a planned method to my madness, as the cliche goes, you know? So I never stopped and said, oh man, what are you thinking? You crazy kid. My brain would go, the more we'd be like, oh my gosh, dude, you messed up. All right, what can I do to pat you on the back? What can I do to rub you on the shoulder and say, gosh, all right, Rock, we're going to get in there round two. Like, that's what I was trying to be. I was trying to be Mick and Rocky, you know? Oh, that's okay. You know what? You took a stiff one to the chin. But that's all right. We're going to come out there. We're going to get him with a hammer jab. All right? You know, that was my job. And that's what I tried to do. So when I saw these things that you would look at and say was, oh my gosh, that was so stupid. I would look at it almost like a dad and go, okay, that's all right, son. That's all right, dog. You know what? That's okay. We're going to come back. We're going to get in there. We're going to get in next time. And I had to do that for both sides to keep the game fair and to keep both teams encouraged so that by the end of the day, each team felt that each team had an equal chance of still winning.
That's a unique way. Like, I never would have thought of that growing up watching the show, thinking that that was your role in the game. Most people, you know, he's trying to keep everything moving, but that emotional support being there for these kids who've never been in that kind of predicament before, national spotlight, all these people watching, you know, even if someone is familiar with Sonic, they still might screw up a bunch just because all of that pressure is on them.
Heck yeah. I like to tell people that when I meet people at like things like MagFest and stuff, I like to tell people like, okay, think about how old you are right now. Okay. Now, how many of you have never been on television? And almost the entire room's hand goes up. I go, okay, now imagine you're a voice changing, simply 14-year-old boy or girl who just was separated from your mom and dad, taken into an icy cold green room, told to put on these clothes and take off your familiar clothes, then have somebody put makeup on you. And if you were a 14-year-old boy, most guys would go, ew, I gotta wear makeup. And then if you're a girl, why is this lady shoving a wire up my shirt? Honey, that's a microphone. Then you walk out in front of like 400 people, and then somebody's there telling you, okay, have fun and act natural. I'm sorry, I've been 14 before. There's absolutely nothing natural about that.
Yeah.
You know? And that's where these kids were coming from. They needed us. They needed the support. But I also had a job to do, and I realized that supporting them and encouraging them throughout the gameplay was also part of my job.
That's really cool. Here's a question for you. You said you've done a bunch of conventions, a bunch of shows. Has anyone ever come up to you and said, hey, I was on the show. Do you remember me?
Never come up to me, but a guy did contact me just like you did on my Facebook fan page. And he was actually on the show. He still lives in Orlando, and we chatted up a bit. But there was one person. Well, you know, I take that back, and it's kind of weird. Yes, there was one person who came up, and it wasn't like he was reminding me he was on the show. I also remembered he was on the show for a long time, like between 2005 and 2013. I was working at E! Entertainment and G4. Yeah, for people who wondered, G4, where did you go? When you watched G4, I was the producer for the show X-Play.
That is awesome.
Yeah, so it's like people are like, man, what'd you do? Why'd you disappear? I'm like, nah, I just grew up, and I'm like controlling stuff now. there was one day in that building. That same big building was where they shot Talk Soup with Joel McHale. And one day I was walking past the green room area, and I hear this guy go, Phil! And I turn around, and I look, and it's Joey Fatone from NSYNC. He was about to make an appearance on Talk Soup. And I walk over to him, and Joey Fatone was on Nick Arcade.
Really?
He was a contestant on Nick Arcade. I don't know if it's still up on YouTube. I know that some of the episodes have been taken down because of copyright stuff. But if you can find it, his name is on the show. He's going by Joseph. And it was way before his NSYNC days. And Joseph Fatone was on Nick Arcade. So here I'm walking by. I don't see him. He calls me, and the reason why he knew who I was, here he is, a big, mega, super famous dude. He's calling out for me because he was like, I was on the show, man. How you doing? I'm like, I remember you and Joe. Come here, man. He ended up and chatted up a little bit. But that was kind of like, yeah. One person actually did do that to me live, and it happened to be, big superstar Joey Fatone. And then,
that is
like I said,
crazy.
There was this other guy who... It is crazy. Yeah. And then, of course, I was walking with a couple of people. We were on our way to a meeting. And then when I walk away, they kind of stop and go, how do you know Joseph? He just called Jill. Joseph called out to you, Philly Phil. Who are you? Why do you not know Joseph? But the other person was a guy who was a contestant. I actually want to say his name was actually Bob. He lives in Orlando still, and he reached out to me, and he was just wondering if I still get back to the area, you know, do I still have family there, and, you know, the whole nine yards. And so anyway, it was nice hearing from him. We chatted it up for a little bit. got to find out what he's doing now. You know, he's all grown up, married, couple of kids. You know, he works at Universal Studios now. And it was nice finding out, you know, like, wow, you know, what he's become. And he still has the fondest memories about being on the show. And obviously, it was must have been super fun for Joey because, like I said, he was really excited to, you know, talk a little bit with me as he saw me in the hallway back at the E building where we shot G4.
That is so cool that Joey Fatone was on Nick Arcade. I'm going to have to try finding footage of that. That's fantastic.
It wasn't that hard to find. Like I said, I don't know if it's still up, but man, if they go on YouTube, you might be able to find it because it was up for a very long time.
Yeah. That is really, really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So are you still a gamer? Still playing things?
You know, yes, but I have a hard time getting into, I have a hard time finding the time to immerse myself in a lot of these new games. Seriously, when I play hard, when I go on like a long tangent of playing games, most of the time I am like taking a step back to some of the more classic games that when I did have time to immerse myself into just play. Like we were talking about Nick Arcade, it was fun to me. Like now I started playing again Metal Gear 4.
Nice.
I played that game when it first came out. I loved that game. That game was like intense, and you know, I've tried to play some of the other ones. And man, they just don't do it. Here's what gets me, man. Sometimes I just want my old game reproduced exactly like they played back in the day, but just with better graphics. Every time they give us a newer version of like an older title, they change it in some way to make it like a fuckmobile. And I'm like, no, just give it to me. Like the latest thing they actually did that with was Crash Bandicoot. Graphics are insane. It looks, state-of-the-art graphics, but the game plays just like the old school game, you know? A lot of times now they got the same characters, but the game doesn't play like, what drives me nuts with that? Remember Need for Speed Most Wanted for the PS2?
Yeah.
They had a version called the Black Edition, okay? There are plenty of Need for Speed. There's actually a Need for Speed Most Wanted for the PS3, but it's got a whole lot of extra stuff in it. I just like the challenges and the police pursuits. I like trying to evade. I like getting 52 cops behind me, wrecking them up, and finding that Shell station, that Texaco station, that garage that you can pull into, and everybody flies by, and you see a little heat meter go off, and you're like, yeah! You know? And I don't like the fact that before I can go do that again, I gotta do a whole bunch of other levels. Like, that other game plays, like, you can play the whole campaign, or you get to a point where you can pick and choose and just do a certain campaign, you know, multiple times and just play it, you know, forever. So, yeah, I still play. It's kind of hard now, man. Now, it's just, you know, life, responsibilities, you know, stuff like that, you know. I just came off of producing a new kid show for NBC, for NBC Universal. It's actually going to appear on the NBC Kids channel called Beat the Clock. That game was like 24/7, man. I'd wake up in the morning, I'd, you know, go into the office at first at, you know, like 8:30 in the morning. We'd be there till like, you know, 8:30 at night. And once we started shooting, you know, we would shoot 4 shows a day and, you know, coming up with games and making sure it was a labor of love. But, you know, when you go home, the last thing you want to do is go, okay, I've been at work for 15 hours, better play some games. Like, no, I gotta be up in the morning. As a matter of fact, when I go home tonight, the job tonight is to prepare for tomorrow's 4 show shoot, you know? So when I go home, it's like, I'm kind of doing homework, you know? So it gets kind of hard, to be that kind of a hardcore gamer like I was back in the day. That's why when I do like find myself with breaks, like right now, you know, we're recording this, it's the holiday time, you know? And I had, last Tuesday, up until, you know, I flew out to Baltimore yesterday. I had time. So, you know, I popped out, Grand Theft Auto 4, Liberty City, you know, instead of playing some of the Liberty City game. But you know what I mean? Because I already learned that game and I wanted to just have a full day of just straight on playing as opposed to, ooh, my man died. Oh, that's what you're supposed to do. Play some more. You know, that learning time you have to learn to acclimate yourself to the gameplay. I didn't want to go through that. I just wanted to have like a good couple hours of just playing. So I have a tendency to gravitate back to some of my older games.
It's that familiarity.
I did cap off the day. The day that I flew out here on a red eye yesterday, got in this morning. But at 3 o'clock in the afternoon before I left LA, I was sitting up there playing Star Fox. Do a battle roll.
Nice.
I love the way that ship handles. I love the way you can like go forward, do a somersault, do the barrel. I love the bombs. I love the way you can pull forward and slow up. I love.
You a Nintendo fan?
The game of all games, you know, my favorite games on the planet are Star Wars Rogue Squadron for Nintendo back in the day.
Nice.
Then 64. And all the Sonics, like you were talking about. Siphon Filter for PlayStation, Omega Strain.
Wow.
Siphon Filter, Omega Strain for PlayStation 2. Need for Speed. Most Wanted, the Black Edition for PlayStation 2. 007, the one that's based off of the GoldenEye?
Yeah.
Oh, it's grainy, it's boxy, it's pixelated, it's the best James Bond game ever. Wouldn't it be dope if they took that exact game, the way it plays, start to finish, but did it in today's graphics? Don't add anything. Don't change, you know what I mean? Don't add anything. Just make it look good.
Just a fresh coat of paint. Keep the gameplay.
Oh,
make
God.
It look pretty.
Old and busted, new hotness. That's what I need. They'll say, now James Bond can do a somersault. I don't even do a somersault. I need him to play just like he played when it looked like, when James Bond's GoldenEye looked like Minecraft. I need it to play just like that, but I need it to look like today's, like, you know, cut scenes in video games. That's what I want. That's my perfect world. Nobody's doing that for me. Who do I need to talk to do that for me?
I don't, probably the people who own the James Bond rights. Because Lord knows that stuff is complicated. But that's what you could do at MAGFest. Just head down to the game room, find some GoldenEye, and just start challenging people. Like, video challenge right now. You're going to face me.
Right,
people
now
will be like, who are you?
Right.
I'm like, Nick Arcade, son of a bitch. I'll fucking kill you. That would just blow people's minds if they didn't know you were at MAGFest, but they grew up watching Nick Arcade, and they just walk into the game room, and you're there next to GoldenEye. And you're just like, it's your turn. Come on over.
What are you talking about? Get over here. What are you scared?
So aside from hosting MAGFest versus in your own panel, what are you looking forward to doing at MAGFest?
I think just answering everyone's question. Like, really. I mean, because I love playing games. I cannot wait to do the panel, but you said beside that, you know, with all these other things, because that's where you find out, like, man, look, if anybody comes out and says hi to me, that's only because they remember something that they liked about what I did when they were a kid. And I appreciate that. And so the mere fact that, you know why I got invited out to MAGFest? Because of everybody who liked Nick Arcade. So the reason why I'm there is because of, you know, the fans, the audience, you know? So I'm there because of them. And that's, and I enjoy meeting these people who sort of made all of this possible for me, you know? That's why I told you, look, people, that, I don't know if you're going to cut this out of the show, but before we started recording, I was like, talk to me about anything, man. Like, you don't have to hold back. You can, you know, because, like, you want to talk to me because of something I did all these years ago that you like. I wouldn't have this opportunity if it weren't for that thing and you asking me to do it. So I'm more than happy to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about, because it was a great time, man. I have the fondest freaking memories about the 90s. The 90s, best decade ever.
And, I agree.
You know, that's, I mean, you know, I'm enjoying life now too, but, you know, it was the Empire Strikes Back of the Nickelodeon saga.
I miss those days. I miss the Nickelodeon. I wish they would bring Nick Gas back. That was such an awesome channel because I could watch Nick Arcade. I could watch Figure It Out. I could watch Wild and Crazy Kids. I loved, I don't know if anyone even remembers this show. I loved the show Finders Keepers.
I do remember Finders Keepers, yeah. Yeah, that, I sure do.
Growing up, it was my dream. I just wanted to go on that show so I could, it's like, go into the kitchen and find this and just tear it the hell apart, just trying to find things.
Yeah.
That was my favorite show. I loved it so much.
It's like a scavenger hunt and a game show rolled into one.
And you get to just break a whole bunch of shit and you don't have to clean anything up.
It's like, you know what? I want y'all to have a rage in your parents' house at 13 years old. You can get away with it.
So fun.
Yeah, it was a great show.
Oh, yeah. Man. So good. Well, Phil, I know you've been on here for a while. Is there anything that you want to talk about with either your MAGFest appearance or with anything else that you're doing that I didn't bring up at all?
You know what? Look, 2018, we're heading into 2018. And like I said, ever since I was asked to do my first con appearance 2 years ago, I realized, like, oh my gosh, how much I enjoy this, how much I miss it. You know, it's not like I walked away from, you know, stuff that I was doing before, you know, bitter. I just kind of went on and did the next thing. Like I said, it was like menudo. With respect to what's coming up, dude, you know, I'm producing a bunch of stuff. I'm back to doing a lot of game shows now. Just came off of, like I said, doing this, you know, revision of Beat the Clock. I'm working on a project that I'm trying to get off the ground. Running, which is kind of a cool 90s throwback show. You know, I had a Kickstarter going on because I'm actually trying to do a revamp of Nick Arcade. Sort of like, in a way, not quite like what the Versus is doing, but this is like going to be on a big giant scale. It's just so much going on, man, that, there isn't anything in particular. I just realized that once I kind of found out that there was still, you know, people wanting to experience this kind of stuff and include me in on it, I was like, shoot, the coin of phrase, certainly game on. All right. I didn't know y'all wanted to play, but here, grab the other controller. Let's get to it.
So indeed.
That's really all that's going on with me, man. That's what's going on with me. I'm moving forward. I've got a couple more things come up that I can't talk about. 2018, couple projects in the works, and, you know, and still trying to get my own revamp of Nick Arcade up called Battle Arcade, which is on GoFundMe. So, dude, just a lot of stuff, man. Loving the fact that, like, I'm back out there. You know, people are like, where'd you go? I just went to a control room and started making shows. But you want to come back out and play some more? All right. Game on.
So where can people keep up to date with you, what you're doing, your projects that are coming out? How can we stay in touch?
The usual suspect, man. I'm on Facebook. I'm under Phil Moore. You, the little icon that is me is, they did an episode of Robot Chicken. Actually, they did like two episodes of Nick Arcane on Robot Chicken. We actually went in and I voiced myself.
Oh, that is awesome.
And, so the little icon is the actual puppet that they use of me for Robot Chicken. So you know that's the fan page. also on Twitter and on Instagram at Philmore for you. PHILMOORE, the number 4 and the letter U. So that's both Twitter and Instagram. Hit me up and I'll hit you back. But it'll be a love fest.
Awesome. Well, again, Phil, thank you so much for coming on the show. It has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. I guess I will be seeing you in about a little over a week from now at MAGFest.
Yeah, man, find me, hunt me down, grab me and go, I am Joe.
Well, I have your phone number now, so I'm just going to text you when I'm there and be like, hey, you bored? You want to grab food?
It'll be like Scream. I'm in the booth behind you.
I'm in your closet.
What are you wearing?
What are you wearing? Hey, Phil, I like the green shirt you're wearing. What do I got to wear green?
Your skin smells good.
No, I mean, I think you're going to have a blast at MAGFest. It is such a fun event.
Everybody's telling me about it. I've seen footage of it. And like I said, doing versus, which is like jumping back into the Nick Arcade sort of, a match made in heaven. I'm looking forward to it. I hope everybody comes out, find me, talk to me. Don't be shy. The best thing I love doing is talking, taking pictures, and cutting it up with everybody, man.
Sounds good. Well, I am looking forward to it, and that'll be, what is it, January the 4th through the 7th,
January,
I think?
January the 4th through the 7th.
Down in Baltimore Harbor, Maryland, right around D.C. I can't wait. This, I've been to every single MAGFest, and I think I'm more excited about this one than I've been in years. So,
dang. So, I'm excited, too. It's my first. I've heard nothing but good things. Like I said, I'm glad the planets could align, and I can finally make it. Plus, hey, I'm from Baltimore, so it was like a free trip to see the family.
There you go. There you go. Works out perfectly.
Right? Win-win.
Oh, man. Well, do you have any final words to end this episode of the show?
I think I kind of said it. Hey, folks, come on down. Check out MAGFest. If you can't check out MAGFest, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram. Check me out on Facebook. Ask me questions. I respond back personally. I don't have like a team of flunkies going, oh, thank you. I'm still more than not. It's really me. And I hope to see y'all there. And you know, like I said, I'll keep you apprised of what stuff I'm doing. Even with some of the things I actually mentioned when I was shooting some of these other shows, sometimes we can't talk about stuff. You know, like you shoot a thing and you can't talk about it. There's a statute of limitation time. There's like an embargo sort of before you can actually kind of announce what it is that you did. So, but when I can talk about stuff, I will. And in the meantime, we could just shoot the breeze, everybody, because, you know, like I said, I love chatting it up with folks.
Yo. Yeah. Y'all. Yeah, you know I live that street life. Country in the west side. Main eventing and you're sitting ringside. Sand duning and we're tearing it up. I finished leveling up. I got this big ass truck, yeah. It's a staple here around my community. I'm riding high at each and every truck opportunity. All the bells and whistles, yeah, I got that. If you got a problem, needs a truck, we can solve that. All that. It's got a ton of torque and spin. It's got a lot of good truck stuff, I'm sure of it. Radio weather, the seats have fake leather, and the dealer told me that I couldn't get much better. Now the wheels go all the way around, and that's all I need to get by. I may not know much, but I know that when I'm showing up, I'm showing up impressive. To cause amazement, it's got a spare tire and 5 liter displacement. Man, all that horsepower and direct inject. I'm thrilled I got a model that still rocks the tape deck. Big backseat for my kids, I keep it tight. Got a max payload and it's totally white. Probably hauls 1,000,000 pounds. It's basically a semi, may not have specifics, but I know it's got a heavy, baby. The wheels go all the way around, and that's all I need to get by.
your fist has got a feeling, and your legs are made of fire, and you've done your devil's dealing with your deepest heart's desire. You can't deny the eagle's roar, though your heart is stone. 100,000 allies, still you need to fight alone. You've got to go for it, nothing to show. The puppet people play in the neon of the pretzel light. You need to stay away, for beneath you lies a dragon with a mighty dragon's kiss. Oh, my mama told me there'd be troubled times like this. Over and under, lightning and thunder, from the fall, stronger than them all.
This is Christmas.